Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
So anything about
Oklahomans knew that, Oklahoma. That's all that
matters. At the end of the day, but he put y'all on the map. That's why you bought them jerseys. That's why you bought them shoes. Because you idolized their brother. Because you idolized their brother. At the end of the day, yes, you did too. That's why you got their trainer for you. That's why you traded them. And evidently you do, you feel some type of way about their brother. You can't, that's why you woke up this morning. You put that trainer on your jersey because you feel some type of way about their brother. At the end of the day, he's a strong brother. At the end of the day, he's a strong man. So for you to go at him like that and say, traitor, that's crazy. Well, evidently you do. You know what I'm saying? You should do him like that. You should be saying, you know, traitor. His decision is a part of him. At the end of the day, that is him. At the end, but he's a grown man. Exactly, he's a grown man. He did what was best for him, and he thought that was best for him. He made that major move. But at the end of the day, KD made Oklahoma City. Without Oklahoma City, there would be no KD.
We're more than that.
No. It's all about KD. He made you irrelevant. KD made Oklahoma City irrelevant. So you need to show that brother much love at the end of the day. Because at the end of the day, he really don't know you. He really don't owe you nothing. But he made OKC at the end of the day. You know what I'm saying? At the end of the day, it would mean no Oklahoma City without KD. So you fail to realize that. You know what I'm saying? So you need to just take that little side and take that off your shirt to my traitor. You know what I'm saying? Because if it wasn't for KD, you wouldn't have no Thunders. It wouldn't be no OKC. KD made you irrelevant at the end of the day. So you need to respect it.
Context of white supremacy, Gusty Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's day, Tuesday, July 5th, 2016. So I have been told. I hope all of our victims of racism, non-white listeners, have all of their fingers and toes intact after the 4th of July shenanigans. I know they had a report in the Seattle Times here that they had well over a dozen folks at the emergency room as a result of unfortunate accidents that happened yesterday. So just emphasize sobriety and staying safe. Already have enough problems under the system of white supremacy. Broadcast today, we will get Dr. Kamau Cambon's reflections. He's been on the program repeatedly, more than five times. I thought it would be extremely informative to get some of his reflections. on Dr. Francis Kress Welsing. We will certainly get to that. He had much to say, an extreme appreciation for her dedication, tireless, ceaseless dedication over nearly a half century to fighting against the system of white supremacy. So we will certainly get to that. But a few other things I want to make sure that we touch on before we hear from Dr. Kamau Kamban. Audio clip you heard at the beginning. Not that this is the most important matter, so we're not going to spend a whole lot of time on it. Kevin Durant, basketball player, black male, switching teams, going to the Golden State Warriors. You saw a lot of the same trifling antics that took place before, really not just with LeBron James leaving Cleveland back in 2010, but I've seen this quite a few other times when these black athletes, when they leave or articulate some sort of autonomy that I am not just your inanimate plaything here to entertain you, a black body without a brain, and I just go out and run around in your fields, on your courts, for your white entertainment, your white amusement, that I can make my own decisions about my career, my life, what's going to be best for me, my family, decisions that I think would behoove my own self-interest. Like, who does this nigga think he is? A la Kurt Flood. We talked about him on the program before. But lots of whites over the past 48 hours have been saying a lot of really nasty things, even corralling some victims of racism to join in, and folks who were upset about this and saying nasty things about Kevin Durant, calling him a coward and cursing at him and whatever else that they can come up with. Typical trashiness of racism, white supremacy. But that audio clip, there was a white person that was actually in Oklahoma City where they had this white person. It looked like it was a small group of people. And they had their signs, and the white guy, he had a Kevin Durant jersey on, and he had Traitor on the back of it. He scratched out Durant's name and put Traitor there, and a black female, in my opinion, demonstrating a great amount of black self-respect. She confronted him. You heard what she said, telling him, you know, Kevin Durant made this place important. If anything, you should be appreciative of what he invested in this city over the last almost decade, that you should be appreciative as opposed to just being out here being upset and calling him names and acting like you're going to take this personal and you're going to come out here to degrade his name and disparage him publicly. I thought that was great black self-respect, and she just let him know her views and then went about her business, whatever else she was doing with her day. I thought, just quickly, as I said, because this is not the most important thing in the system of white supremacy, I can think of many other important things connected to Oklahoma City. I think they just had a massive set of tornadoes not even that long ago that I'm sure they are still reconstructing and trying to rebuild. I think some people died and significant property loss that they took quite a bit of time to recover from, not to mention Daniel Holdsclaw. I know this situation with Kevin Durant. I mean, we're talking about a ball game. This situation got a lot more attention than Oklahoma City police officer Daniel Holdsclaw raping more than a dozen black females. I didn't hear nearly as much outrage and protesting whites out in the street. How can we have an Oklahoma City peace officer out terrorizing black females in this manner? I didn't hear nearly as much outrage. So, I mean, if we really want to put this in context, that's why I said I don't really care either way. Who cares about their ball games? None of that is going to solve our problems as black people, victims of white supremacy. But as I said, just for additional context, I remember, I think Kevin Durant arrived in Seattle almost at the same time that we did. The Oklahoma City team was in Seattle. He won Rookie of the Year here in Seattle, and I was not upset when he and the entire team departed for Oklahoma City, so I certainly do not care now that he has, you know, decided he's going to exit and move off to Oakland down in California. A few other things that I did think of, again, I'm reminded of Kurt Flood, black male baseball player with St. Louis, pause for Michael Brown, who kind of opened the door. I think he's the person that gets credited with this free agency, being able to sign and negotiate your own contracts and do what you want, because this was not allowed previously. They did not allow black athletes that level of autonomy over their bodies and what they were going to do athletically, baseball, basketball, the other professional sports that are still racist dominated worldwide, not just here in this country. But I thought it was really interesting because here in Seattle, apparently the whites, even though they were not really super, super vested, it didn't seem, at least that was my perception being here at the time, it didn't seem they were super vested in trying to keep the team here in Seattle for a variety of reasons. It was just kind of a, stay, go, whatever the case may be. I just never got that impression. Maybe it is. But they have certainly over the past, I think it's been like 8-9 years since the team has been in Oklahoma City. I can certainly vouch and say that I have seen a lot of different articulations that they do take pleasure in seeing Oklahoma City fail. I remember during the 2012 finals, there were lots of articles hoping that they lost, hoping that LeBron James and Miami could get it together and beat them, which they did. So they rejoiced when they lost. They rejoiced when Oklahoma City lost to Golden State in the conference finals this year in the playoffs. Lots of rejoicing, and they had different articles. I don't know if I shared them, but again, whites just, yes, we're so happy. We're so delighted that they failed. We hope they lose and lose forever. And the same thing happened when Kevin Durant lost. They had an article in the Seattle Times posted yesterday by Matt Calkins. This is a white male. His article's titled Oklahoma City's Pain in Losing Kevin Durant is Seattle's Joy. And the very first line in the report, it reads, birds are chirping, locals are whistling, Schadenfreude is in the air. And just that word, Schadenfreude, we have talked about that concept on this program before. I posted this article on my Facebook page and in the Cows group as well. I think that concept is a significant aspect of white culture, way beyond just this event, because we've talked about it so frequently. I think the first time that I mentioned this word, and I think Thomas in New York asked me to spell it specifically, if I remember, it was when we were doing the book study session on Katrina after the flood, Gary Rivlin, and I was talking about it in the context of the former mayor, now federal inmate, Ray Nagin. And I said that it seemed that there was a great deal of Schadenfreude in enjoying Ray Nagin being incarcerated in greater confinement. Yes, get to see another black person fail and be in misery. Woohoo! I see this all the time. And really, I mean, Schadenfreude, this term, this concept is a synonym for sadism. It's the same thing. Sadism, you take pleasure, often something, some sort of sexual gratification in seeing others in misery and suffering. It is a super component of racism, white supremacy, and I think frequently, all the time, daily even, whites, they take fantastic gratification in black suffering and misery. I see this all the time. We talk about this in workplace racism, and just to see this on display again, even though this is seeing a lot of whites lamenting that Kevin Durant has left Oklahoma City, and so they're so happy and glad that Oklahoma's, the folks that are supporting the Oklahoma City Thunder team are going to be suffering, and they probably won't win anything for a while, and this might cause some of their other better players to leave as well. But just that concept once again, and it's the very first sentence of the article. We are so delighted to see them suffering and sad for July 4th. Whoopee! We don't even have a team. This team has been gone for 10 years and we're still celebrating all of this. And I see this concept, the Schadenfreude, sadism, whichever way you want to think about it. I see it articulated. You had a lot of whites who were just hugely satisfied to see Minister Malcolm X when he was assassinated in 65 and saying, oh, that's what you get. You preach death. That's what you get. Ha, ha, ha. And writing this in major publications. Same thing with wanting to see President Obama fail when they were coming out and saying this openly, blatantly, repeatedly in 2008 when he was elected. Wanting to see Cam Newton lose, if you want to keep it in the arena of sports, back with the Super Bowl this year, and saying that he's so cocky and he's so arrogant and we're so glad to see him get knocked down a peg. I heard a white woman say that specifically, explicitly, at a coffee shop here in Seattle. Serena Williams wanting to see her lose, wanting to see her fail. Muhammad Ali, he said that himself, that he felt like a lot of people wanted to see him lose. LeBron James, certainly, that's an all-the-time thing and wanting to see him fail. But just that stuck out. As I said, I don't think this is the most important or significant thing in the system of racism, white supremacy. Certainly is related anytime that whites are going to comment about a black person expressing some form of autonomy and what they're going to do with their lives, their skills, their talents. Moving forward. We will get to Dr. Cambon's segment in a moment. There is one other clip that I will get to before we get to that, and this is I am relating two topics, and it is even NBA-related, directly NBA-related, but I am also connecting this to what happened with Jesse Williams. That's something that we didn't talk about a whole lot. I purposely was not really interested in talking about a whole lot because I heard the speech. It took a while for me to even listen to it. I didn't even listen to it until this week, but I heard the speech, and I didn't feel compelled to rush out and listen to it because I had heard Jesse Williams before. This is not like this is the first time that he said something about racism. Jesse Williams, he's an actor on Grey's Anatomy. He does have a white parent, which I think is relevant, significant. They showed his white mother at the BET Awards where he gave his speech last month. But he gave this speech talking about racism and police brutality, and he did some name drops for Sandra Bland and Michael Brown and Rekia Boyd and Eric Garner and Tamir Rice and some of the other victims of white terrorism over the past few years or so. But he's been talking about a lot of these incidents for years at this point. I know I heard him way back in 2014 where he was talking about everything that was going down in Ferguson. I think he might have even gone to Ferguson to participate in some of the protests and things that were happening when, you know, things were hot, when things really flared up back, I think, in like August and September, right, within the first few days and weeks after Michael Brown was shot and killed by Darren Wilson. But I had heard him speak before. I wasn't upset about it. I wasn't overjoyed. It was just, oh, okay, right on, something constructive. He said what he said, if you want to stick to code, but like, okay, right on. I had heard other people that were entertainers, musicians, actors, actresses. I had heard other people talking about that as well, so it was not startling to hear him, amongst others, saying something about racism and these police shootings specifically. But I was taken aback by how much attention was focused on Jesse Williams' award speech more recently, both positive attention in terms of people just being overjoyed and, oh, this is wonderful, and have an entertainer come out and say all this on a major primetime television program, and the allegations and people saying that they were upset that he was getting all this attention. They felt that he wouldn't be getting this attention if he didn't have a white parent, and if he had a bit more melanin, if he looked like his former Grey's Anatomy co-star, Isaiah Washington, if I want to name someone specifically who I'd heard talking about racism. Isaiah Washington, black male, he was in Love Jones, he was in Bullworth, he also was formerly on Grey's Anatomy until he said something about quote-unquote homosexuals, and then he got labeled a black homophobe. They fired him from the show, and his career was kind of in purgatory for years. He still kind of has that stigma of being, oh man, remember what you said a decade ago, and oh man, aren't you sorry, aren't you pitiful. He's talked about this. He did an interview on NPR where he talked about this within the last two or three years, and saying that that just has continued to kind of follow him around and make it difficult for him, and he kind of has to constantly explain himself when he's out and about or what have you. But Mr. Isaiah Washington, he was on CNN just last year, and he was talking about white supremacy. He referenced Neely Fuller Jr.'s book. He tweeted Neely Fuller Jr.'s book. He tweeted about Dr. Francis Cresswell. I mean, he was extremely explicit in his commentary last year, and I'm not sure if that got as much attention as Jesse Williams. Maybe Jesse Williams is a bigger star, has more clout in Hollywood. As I said, Isaiah Washington is still dealing with the fallout and all of the attacking against him as a result of his comments that were perceived to be homophobic. I think he used the word faggot. I could be in error about that, but I think that's what happened. And again, that was like a decade ago. At any rate, I am connecting everything that went down with Jesse Williams to this segment that was on Michael Rappaport's podcast, where he was talking about Stephen Curry, who is an NBA player. He also is on the pale side, doesn't have as much melanin as Isaiah Washington, LeBron James, Dick Gregory, Samuel L. Jackson, on the lighter side. And they're talking about the same thing and saying that Stephen Curry is getting a lot of criticism from black people because he is light-skinned, and they don't think that this is just, that this is incorrect, that this is what they call colorism. If you want to think of Spike Lee's film School Days, where black people that are darker and black people that are lighter have some sort of conflict or don't get along as a result of the difference in pigmentation. One of the things that I always think is massively incorrect, that people are going to talk about this, I definitely want to make sure. I'm not saying that this squabbling is not a problem. We've talked about this on the program before. We've talked about this with Pam. Plug her website, racismws.com. She's talked about it in her numerous publications. I think the Beauty Con Game most explicitly talks about this and how this colorism and getting black people to squabble and bicker with each other about who's lighter or who's darker and what that means, that all is a part of the racist white supremacist design. And just in my view, anytime that conversation takes place and it's not rooted in racism, white supremacy, it is a major error. And often I am left to think that this is just another means to talk about how lame and defective black people are without making sure we explain how things got this way, that we were not just born. The Creator did not put us on this planet to squabble and bicker with each other about, oh, well, you are a few shades lighter, so I don't like you, or I have a problem with you, or you are a few shades darker. All of that comes as a result of what has happened to us for centuries of being terrorized by whites, who are the most color conscious people in the universe, the most color conscious race in the universe, and all for nefarious purposes. Again, we've talked about this before, not just with Pam. We also talked about this with Dr. Ronald E. Hall, his book, An Historical Analysis of Skin Color Discrimination. This was back in 2011. We talked about this concept on the program before, and I think every time that we've done so, it's been rooted within racism, white supremacy, and whites being most to blame for all of this. But I'm connecting the two because I saw articles, I've seen many articles, both with Stephen Curry and the Golden State Warriors saying that, oh man, black people, it's messed up. I see so many black people hating on the Golden State Warriors and talking bad about them, or talking bad about Stephen Curry and celebrate, maybe even Schadenfreude, and rejoicing that they lost in the finals. And the same thing with Jesse Williams. I've seen a lot of black people where they're talking bad and saying that they hate him, or they are tired of him getting all this attention because of his speech, and that's messed up, and colorism with amongst black people is a big problem. I've seen a lot of that, and I'm suspicious, very suspicious of that line of thinking. Again, not that I'm saying colorism is a problem, but just the way that this has been presented. I see black people squabble, scrutinize, fuss, name call other black people all the time. It's not like Jesse Williams and Stephen Curry are the only individuals on the planet, only black people on the planet, who are the source of ire for black people. I mean, that is absurd to the highest degree. I'm going to play this segment from Michael Rapaport's podcast where he's talking about this very concept, because for me, this makes the point better than anything I could say. I think Mr. Fuller always says, whites can show you better than I can tell you. And this really makes the point. And it does so well, because Michael Rapaport doesn't really say a whole lot. All he does is host this podcast, and then he turns the floor over to a black journalist, Jamila Hill, and she's done a lot of work talking about racism. Some of it is great, where she makes just outstanding points. Huge significance of black journalism, and she's been doing her work for a long time, many, many years. She's a reporter at ESPN. But that said, he turns things over to her to let her say all of this, and then he just co-signs when it's done. I've pointed this technique out before, where racists, they are awesome with this technique. I think this is in the book 48 Laws of Power, where this is one of the ways that you can manipulate and control things, where you can get someone to advance your objective. If it's just the use of words, you can get someone specifically to go out and say, articulate your point of view, your perspective, the way that you want people to think about a certain subject matter, but you are not the one that says it. That can be more effective sometimes, because people might be more suspicious if you come out and are saying this, or are encouraging people to think in a certain way. You can be more persuasive, more manipulative, if you get someone else to be the messenger. I think Amy Goodman does this in a devastating manner all the time. Anytime that she wants to talk bad about President Obama, she just gets victims of racism, some non-white people, generally some black people, to come in and bash on President Obama, and she just sits back and doesn't say a word. Michael Rappaport, in my opinion, does the exact same thing in this segment. The only thing I'll say before I hit the play button, I think in context for Michael Rappaport, I think it is important. I can do it chronologically. Most recently, he had a very public spat with aforementioned Spike Lee. They were talking about gentrification. Spike Lee had made public comments talking about gentrification as just another weapon of white supremacy, racial dislocation of black people. They were talking in New York specifically. For whatever reason, Michael Rappaport felt compelled to inject himself in this conversation. And how dare Spike Lee come out and have something bad to say about gentrification? And who does he think he is? Specifically, he called him a shit stain. In quotes, I'm not cleaning that up or censoring because that's exactly what he said in the commentary. This was very public. I think this was 2014. Before that, Michael Rappaport was in the Spike Lee film Bamboozled, which I think is phenomenal work. He was in that film. He played the character Dunwoody, who you're going to hear at the beginning of this segment, who calls black people niggers, produces a extremely white supremacist minstrel show to just degrade black people, and justifies all this by saying that he's married to a black female. You'll hear some of the commentary before we even get into his podcast. And then even before that, I'm so glad one of our listeners reminded me, he was also in Higher Learning, the John Singleton film. He played a white supremacist. I'm not, making that up. He played a white supremacist, and ultimately his character killed Tyra Banks in the film. If folks remember that, that came out in the 90s. I could also mention Zebrahead as well. That was Oliver Stone's flick from more than 20 years ago, which is also all about racism, white supremacy, where Michael Rappaport is in some sort of tacky sexual arrangement with a black female. But that is for another day. All of that is context that should be kept in mind when we listen to Michael Rappaport, as though he's so concerned about how Steph Curry is treated. The last tidbit, just for context, he does this podcast on May 31st of 2016. That's the date that this podcast originally aired. 2 days later, the title of the podcast that he does is LeBron James Bash Extravaganza. June 2nd, 2 days later, the very next podcast that he does is LeBron James Bash Extravaganza. This guy, Michael Rappaport, hates LeBron James for whatever reason, has LeBron James much more melanated than Steph Curry. And he's done not just one, but many, many segments where he talks about how much he dislikes LeBron James. He even got invited on talk shows after LeBron James and Cleveland won the NBA championship to talk about how he still despises and hates LeBron James. So he can stop all of his hating of LeBron James for long enough to say, oh man, it's terrible how Steph Curry is being treated by the Negroes, and then get back to hating on LeBron James. Just add that in for context. So we'll get to his podcast. This is Michael Rappaport, May 31st, 2016. His guest is the victim of white supremacy, Jamila Hill, black female. And they're talking about colorism as it relates to Steph Curry, context of white supremacy. We have Oklahoma City Thunder listeners in Oklahoma who are present. Salute. If you have any commentary you'd like to share about what you've observed from Ground Zero about white's conduct about Kevin Durant leaving, feel free. We'll have time for listeners to share later on as well. But this is Michael Rappaport, context of white supremacy.
You know, I grew up around black people my whole life. I mean, if the truth be told, I probably know niggas better than you. And don't go getting offended by my use of the quote-unquote N-word. I have a black wife and two biracial kids, so I feel I have a right. I don't give a goddamn what that prick Spike Lee says. Tarantino was right. Nigger is just a word. If old Dirty Bastard could use it every other word, why can't I?
Well, I would prefer if you did not use that word in my presence.
Oh, really? Nigger, 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 nigger.
All right, so I'm calling my friend Jamel Hill, who I love, 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 love. She is the host, the co-host of His and Hers on ESPN with Michael Smith. And I'm just a huge fan of hers. I love her. I love her take on sports. I think she's got great personality. She's fun. And I just think she's dope. So I'm calling Jamel Hill. This is an interview from the Vroom Tomb. a driving interview with an actual ESPN sports reporter. Another groundbreaking move here at the Ian Rapoport Stereo Podcast Diary of Game 7 episode. We're going live and direct now with the fantastic Jemele Hill.
Hello.
Jemele, it's Michael Rapoport. How are you?
I'm good. What's going on, man?
Hey, what's going on is it's Game 7, and I can't say that I can't remember being this excited about a Western Conference Finals game. It almost feels like a Super Bowl sort of anticipation for this game.
Yeah, I mean, the ratings have come back from Game 6, and it's already, that game was the most watched NBA game of the season, so I can't imagine what this one will be. But, I mean, you're right. It's funny because each game is its own story, but this one, it just feels so momentous. So much is on the line. You got a 73-year historic team. You have all this conversation about whether or not if Oklahoma City loses this game, what kind of impact this might have on Kevin Durant. I mean, it feels like the fate of humanity is on this game.
Now, let me ask you a question, because you know, I'm asking this because I'm so fascinated by what you guys do at ESPN, and you're there on a day-to-day basis, and, you know, could you have imagined this Curry backlash? I mean, maybe it's because I'm blind and I'm such a fan of his. Could you have imagined, so fast, like, people turning on Curry so quick? And how does that happen, and why do you think that happened? Because, I mean, as far as a sports guy and as sort of a hero, he's everything you'd want. But then he has a couple of bad games, he's on the ropes, and, I mean, it was just like, boom. Like, it was people laughing at him, giggling at him, talking greasy. What is that all about? And did you ever imagine that would happen so fast to somebody like that who's so well-liked?
I knew it would happen eventually, because eventually it happens to everybody, because success does breed contempt for a lot of people. But here's the thing. There's so many layers to the Steph Curry hatred. One, you got all these old heads like Oscar Robertson and even my man Charles Barkley, you know, who I love dearly, that just simply that don't like the style of basketball that Golden State is playing.
Right.
And this, yeah, you know what I mean? And this idea that a shooter, quote unquote, is dominating the game and is considered to be the best basketball player in the NBA right now. They can't stand that idea. Because as it is, they have issues with today's basketball in general, but they really have issues with how the Warriors play as a dominant three-point shooting team, as a team that is kind of representative of the analytical evolution of this game. They cannot stand that.
Right.
Then you have another layer of it, in that there are people who feel like Steph is some kind of package that we just have to accept. He's got the NBA bloodlines and his dad playing. He's got the fine mom that everybody loves. He's got a beautiful wife. He's got the two kids. It's like they just don't want to believe this dude is quote-unquote perfect because of what the outer layer exterior is. And so there's that part of it. And then even deeper, if I could just go way, way deep, deep, deep on a racial level.
Let's go.
He's light-skinned, man.
Right.
And, like, I swear that it just is the hatred and the stuff that I hear about him and about them, as in him and Clay, it is unfortunately exposed this deeper level of insecurity within Black people that they have when it comes to skin tone. That is kind of, it's very bizarre to see it unfold. Like, there's this perception that light-skinned cats are soft. All
right.
And so he's got to live with that perception, and because of the way that he's dominating the game, people play him like he's soft.
Right.
And, you know, a lot of people kind of reject this idea. And then there's this other part of it. It's like Steph was a story that people didn't see coming. And because people everybody didn't brilliantly, you know, prophesize, like with LeBron, that LeBron was going to be this big superstar. Everybody knew that. Everybody could see that coming. But nobody saw it coming with Steph. And so because of that, they had to find reasons to reject it because they didn't understand it from the beginning. You know, dude went to Davidson. you know, while considered to be a good player, nobody ever saw him as being an MVP.
Right.
And so when you miss out on that stuff, people have to find ways to reject a narrative that they didn't understand from the beginning. Because when it comes to basketball, everybody likes to feel like they're smart, like they know the game. And because they didn't see this, they're like, oh, well, we got to reject it because we didn't see it coming. And, of course, we're all smart and knowledgeable, and we should have known better.
That's what you just said is you just covered the whole thing. So
Let me add one more layer of the mic.
Give me
and
some more layers.
On top of that, one more layer, that he got the nerve to be the unanimous MVP. And so, of course, we like him, we as in the media, because anybody we like, automatically people can't think. So they're like, hold up, you got 131 people in the media to agree that this guy was the truth. Of course we can't stand him, especially when I wish to God, I'm telling you, that Michael Jordan had won a unanimous MVP or any of the other greats had, because he wouldn't face this kind of hate.
Right.
And you got to understand, too, it's not just like people on Twitter and social media that hate. The open disrespect he's shown by other players, I've never seen before.
I've never seen it either. It's crazy to me.
I mean, it is completely crazy. For LeBron to all of a sudden, unprovoked, to go into this conversation about what value is in the NBA, it's like, he would have done that if Russell Westbrook won it.
Right.
Like, it's just like, he just did it, like, completely unprovoked. And then, you know, you have Dame Lillard dropping the tweet, no excuses. It's like, yo, like, they didn't do that with LeBron. They didn't even do that with Dirk Nowitzki, all right? People going in on him. And his team got sent home in the first round of the year. He won an MVP.
Right.
And yet, it's completely acceptable to do it with Steph.
That's good stuff, Jamel, because I agree. You know, I'm a fan of his. And I was fortunate to follow him at Davidson, probably just because of his last name, and I knew his pops, and I just became aware of him, I've come across him. He's just chill. I just don't understand it. I agree with everything that you just said.
Context of white supremacy, and I have no problem, no issue with Jamila Hill, her analysis there, or any place else. Like I said, she's done a lot of great journalistic work talking explicitly about racism, white supremacy in sports. And even if I didn't agree with her assessment, she's a victim of white supremacy. She has VGQ. She said what she said. I will take issue with Michael Rappaport. And as I said, just the whole way that it's packaged, and it's not just the Jesse Williams thing. And again, I'm not trying to minimize or say that, quote unquote, colorism is not a problem. I will submit, though, that regardless of whether black people are arguing, bickering, squabbling with each other about who's darker, who's lighter, the system of white supremacy encourages black people and non-white people on the whole to argue and squabble, be in conflict with each other about anything. As I stated before, because you're too dark, because you're too light, because you've read too much, because you've not read enough, any reason will do. That is what the entire system of white supremacy is predicated on. Keep non-white people in conflict with each other for any reason. Keep them totally unfocused on whites. The problem. Racist man, racist woman, racist child. Now, the packaging, and I've seen the same packaging in terms of delivering this critique that, oh man, look at how bad black people are behaving towards Jesse Williams and Steph Curry and the Warriors on the whole. When it's packaged by someone like Michael Rappaport, I am tremendously suspicious, particularly just his whole vernacular, like talking as though I'm so cool and I'm so down with black people. I can use what is stereotypically thought of as black slang. And I know Steph Curry's pops and people are talking greasy about Steph Curry. And so just everything about that just seems so fake and pretentious. And he can say, well, you know, I grew up in New York. I'm down. I'm hip. This is what I do. I grew up listening to Trap Club. Whatever. to me, you come across just like a racist white supremacist who would fool a lot of black people into thinking this is a cool white guy. He knows what's up. He's down with black people. He sounds like us. He likes black people. He watches basketball. He did a whole documentary on Tribe Called Quest. Rest in peace, Fife Dog. But I have seen that before. You're not going to fool me. I know racists They can listen to any kind of black music and have done so for centuries. They can listen to black music. We talked about that in The Half Has Never Been Told. The raping white enslaver can have no problem coming out and listening to Fiddler for an hour or 5 hours and then coming in to rape your mother, your daughter, your wife, you, or sell you all tomorrow morning after he's been out listening to you all play the banjo for 5 hours. They have no problem with that at all. And that's what I'm saying. I have a problem with the packaging. It's not just with this report, because a lot of these other articles that have been suggesting or saying, oh, man, it's messed up how black people are treating Jesse Williams, how they're treating the Warriors, even if it has not been delivered specifically by a white person. And Michael Rappaport didn't explicitly say that. But you set things up so that we get this perspective. And again, you do this podcast and you come back in 48 hours and the program is less talk bad about LeBron James. No, you lose all credibility if that's what it's going to be. That I'm sad that maybe some black people talked bad about this particular non-white person who happens to be a little bit lighter complexion. And then as soon as we're done with that, I'm going to get back to talking bad about these other black people that I don't like. And that is totally acceptable for me to do that, not just one time, but all the time, to talk bad about this other black person that I don't like, or a myriad of black people that I don't like, including Spike Lee, even though they're supposedly to have patched things up with the beef that they had a few weeks ago. As I said, I see the same thing with Jesse Williams. I don't have a problem with Jesse Williams. I can't say that I'm, you know, overjoyed about his sentiments. I kind of had the same responses when I saw Isaiah Washington last year when he posted about Neely Fuller Jr. and was talking about white supremacy on CNN with Don Lemon. Great. Wonderful. More attention on white supremacy. Hopefully more people will read Mr. Fuller's work. Continuing with what's, you know, the business at hand, trying to solve this problem. I was not overjoyed. I still am a little miffed at why people would be so just overwhelmed. And this is incredible. Not angry. Just that is a tad surprising. And I could see the logic in people trying to explain why that would be the case, that this would receive so much attention either way. But moving forward, and I certainly will make time if folks have commentary on that aspect, the Kevin Durant aspect, or what we hear from Dr. Kanban, his reflections on Dr. Francis Cress Welsing. Just before I get to that, I think two quick things. Number one, the metaphor wake-up call. I don't particularly care for that metaphor. I don't think it's accurate. My suggestion would be not to use it. Reason, explanation. If you think about waking up, those metaphors are always encouraged. If you think about waking up, for most people, that is not a process. I don't know what time you woke up this morning, given what you may have done yesterday, July 4th. But whenever you woke up this morning, I'm sure it did not take you 5 hours to get out of bed. I'm sure most mornings, whatever the case may be, weekday, weekend, if you have to go to work or not, if you have more free time on the plantation that day, I'm sure for most people, when you wake up, it's not a long, drawn-out process. It's pretty close to being instantaneous. Oh, I'm awake. It might take you a few seconds, maybe even a few minutes, certainly depending on your age, to actually physically get out of the bed. But the process of waking up is not something that is long and drawn out. It's pretty close to being an instantaneous thing in terms of waking up. When people use that metaphor, wake up call, about racism, get your wake up call and all of that, I think it's massively inaccurate. And in my view, it promotes an incorrect way of thinking about racism. You do not wake up to racism. You have to learn, in my view, you have to take time to learn, even if I would borrow from higher learning, unlearn, rethink, reflect, to get a better understanding of white supremacy. That takes time. That can be something, a process that takes years of study, reflection, thinking, questions, analysis, observation. That takes a lot of time. It is not analogous to waking up out of bed at all. It's not even close, in my opinion. And it, in my view, promotes this way of thinking as though it is an instantaneous process of coming to get a better comprehension of white supremacy racism. That's not true at all. I'm still learning. We've been doing this program for 7 years. I'm still learning. We're still working to get a better way of using words to articulate racism, white supremacy, a better way of conveying these concepts, counter-racist logic, to other victims of racism, including myself, figuring out the best way to think about this, speak about this, act against white supremacy, and manage our emotions. That is a constant process. It's not a one-time, oh, I am woke up to racism, on and moving. That's, I mean, it just, in my view, it's totally inaccurate, and I would encourage people to rethink, if not to discontinue, the use of that metaphor in talking about a person getting a quote-unquote wake-up call as it relates to racism, white supremacy. Number one. Number two. Also, I hear people saying that separation, I hear this regularly. People post about this. People sometimes have said it on the program, suggesting that the solution to white supremacy is separation, quote unquote, black people somehow sequestering ourselves away from whites or maybe even non-white people in total, having some sort of geographic location that is exclusive to non-white people. That, in my view, is another incorrect way of thinking about racism, white supremacy. It's not going to solve this problem. In my view, it's promoted as a false solution, and it's obvious. To me, it would come down to what is your understanding of racism, white supremacy? What is the reality of white power? Non-white people do not have the ability to enforce separation from whites. That is obvious. If that were the case, we would not have a problem of what is called gentrification, racial dislocation. It would just be, this is our neighborhood, get out. We don't allow crackers, whites, albinos, whatever you want to call them, we don't allow you all around here. This is our spot, roll. We better not see you back here again, or, you know, you will get it. You will know not to come back around here. That I have not seen enforced anywhere in the world, not just in this part of the globe. You have this same problem, even though they don't call it gentrification, on the continent. And I've been seeing those reports for years. Whites buying up property or doing whatever they want on the continent and elsewhere. Same thing in areas that they call Asian parts of the world, where whites putting army bases down. I've even seen this where they're putting army bases down in Japan, and the non-white people there have said specifically, we don't want these bases here. We don't want you to have this location. And the whites have said, and you don't have the power to do anything about it. So, right, duly noted, and continuing with construction of our military fortress. That is racism, white supremacy. I'm not even if we were talking on a micro level, I have not seen where black people have the ability to exclude whites from their family. I have seen, and I've heard it from you all calling in, non-white people, black people, non-whites on the whole, have a problem even keeping black people from marrying, sexually sewering our offspring or cousins or siblings. I have seen and heard that reported for years. If we had the muscle to keep ourselves separate from whites, that wouldn't be a problem. They wouldn't even have access to our offspring or siblings to be sexually involved with them at all. It's just not accurate in my view. I think it's one of those things, if we want to say it, and it could just come down to not using the correct terms to articulate a possible means of countering racism. If it's minimizing contact with whites as much as possible under these conditions, great. All for that. Absolutely. Particularly sexually, but as in many areas as possible. Minimizing contact involvement with whites, absolutely. But if you mean separation, and maybe even that would have to be defined in terms of how separate is separate. How far away does a white person have to be? 30 miles, 50 miles, 5 inches? Exactly what are you talking about? But again, I just have not seen where non-white people anywhere in the world have the power to deny white people access to where we happen to be at. Again, and the same thing could be applied to police brutality, what they call police brutality, police terrorism. We wouldn't have these issues with Michael Brown, Sandra Bland, Rekia Boyd, Eric Garner, ad infinitum, if we could just deny whites access. We don't allow white cops around here. Roll. Get out of here. Go patrol someplace else. This is our area. We better not see you back around here again. I have not seen where we have that power. If I'm in error, for sure, make sure that you have a note and dial in immediately to set Gus straight if I am, you know, talking greasy, not making sense here on the cows. With that, we will get to the reflections from Dr. Kamal Kamban. It was fantastic to be able to hear some of his views. I think he might be agreeable to releasing, because this is not the entirety of our conversation. He might be agreeable to releasing the entire conversation. I know he had talked about that. He had messaged me about that. If he does, I will give folks the details for how you can access that. But this is just a portion, because he had a lot more to say. But this is a portion of his reflections on Dr. Frances Cress Welsing, her teachings, and her appreciation for what she did with her life energy in the more than 50 years of counter-racist work that she dedicated with her time on the planet. You can visit his website, KamalKamban.org. Address again, KamalKamban.org. It's linked in the description to the program. If you are listening at Black Talk Radio Network, I'll give the address out again once the audio segment concludes. If you want to visit his site, invest, support his counter-racist efforts. You'll see the link where you can support his efforts on his website, KamalKamban.org. You'll see it once you go there, and you'll see some of the other great postings that he's done. Even as a photograph that he took with Dr. Frances Cress Welsing, you'll hear him talking about some of the times that he was able to meet her personally throughout his life, and himself studying, getting a better understanding of racism, white supremacy. But without further ado, I would encourage, if you have some sort of regard for the teachings of Dr. Kamban, you can tweet, post on Facebook, share links to the program so other non-white people can hear what Dr. Kamban has to say. Certainly, if you have some regard for Dr. Frances Cress Welsing and what she did while she was here trying to heal black people and help us gain a better understanding of white supremacy, certainly take time to share with other victims of racism so that they, too, can learn about the monumental loss that we suffered this year, in a year that has seen a host of just colossal losses for black people worldwide. This is Dr. Kamal Kamban reflecting on Dr. Frances Cress Welsing, Context of White Supremacy. Your reflections on Dr. Welsing?
Well, I can say that personally that she means so much to me, and I use the present tense because in African tradition, the spirit never dies, and her spirit, you know, will always live. And this is one of the things I like about African tradition. Some things I don't like, but this is one of the aspects that I think is very relevant, that this idea of the spirit living on. And there's a proverb, African proverb, I'll paraphrase, that as long as you call the person's name, and I carry it one step further, saying that as long as you even think about the person, the person continues to live on. So when they do libation, that means you call on the ancestors, you call their name, Marcus Garvey, Paul Robeson, I love William Patterson, you know, among others, Chairman Fred Hampton, Bunchy Carter. The list is endless. And I did a presentation on, not a presentation, but the part of the eulogy for Baba Herman Ferguson, who I love him. He was a colleague, close associate of Malcolm X. He was here in North Carolina, and I got a chance to spend a lot of time with him. And when you call their names, during the eulogy, what I said was I created and I elevated people like them, now including Dr. Welsing, to what I call the Blacknificent, the Grandcester Hall of Grand Blacknificence. That means that she's now not just an ancestor, but someone explicitly fighting for our liberation, I call a grandcestor. Like we have grandparents, grandchildren. Why not have grandcestors that we really elevate them and give them the stature that they have earned, like Ida B. Wells. So Dr. Wellsing is there in that grandcestor hall of blacknificence. She's just such a class person. How she carried herself with such dignity. And what one of the most beautiful aspects of Dr. Wellsing was that her behavior matched her words. See, I always talk about let's minimize and eliminate as much as possible our contrary diction while we're in this paradigm called the USA, the United States Corporation of America. And so she personified this idea of matching her words with her actions. And she said, carry yourself with dignity. That's how she carries herself. She said, I heard one of her lectures. I actually pulled out about 3 or 4 weeks ago. It's an old lecture, she said, when she was talking about her parent, I think it might have been her mother, said, mother said, say what you think. That's what she did. She said what she thought. And she thought out what she was going to say. So she was more than a psychiatrist to me. She was a psychiatrist, she was a medical doctor, but she was a scientist. And I have said this before, that we are fighting against people who are scientific, who are mathematical, who are methodical and calculating. So she understood that fully, and that's how she was. She was scientific, she was mathematical, she was methodical, she was calculating, and she was articulate. And how she brought forward the understanding of this dynamic that she called white supremacy. And she extended it with the understanding that she got from the work of Neely Fuller. And he was a close friend and colleague. That this is a global dynamic that she said we were in. And she taught us that there's a tiny minority that ruling the planet. And what she has said is irrefutable, that they are trying to avoid white genetic annihilation. Now, I have kind of inserted a little difference in what she has said. I've added to it. And this is why thinking is so important, because these great grandcestors bring us these ideas and these concepts. And as a human being, we're supposed to evolve them and extend them so that we can come up with a solution to the problem. You know, not just come and talk about it and talk about it. And she offered us her solutions, you know, clean up where you are, don't disrespect yourself, et cetera. And so I have said that in addition to the characteristics that she said we should adopt, that we should also understand this global dynamic called the global chessboard. That on this chessboard, white moves, plays offense, defense, and black plays defense, offense. Now, I've kind of changed that. I have a little, and she's helped me kind of crystallize this idea. And I'm saying that for the most part, that the white side of the board is really playing defense. And we are on offense. Dr. Khalid Abdul Muhammad, I could say that he's a friend of mine. He was a friend of mine. But in the current sense, you know, even though he's a grandcestor, I say, you know, he's a friend of mine. He said, he makes a statement. He said, we shall not overcome, we shall overrun. And I have said that if the white people just left us alone for the last 50 years, we would be running America. We would be running this corporation. So everything they do is a scheme. And frankly, I call them the scheming demons. The Constitution is a scheme. Now, Dr. Welsing helped me come to this understanding. When she said, yeah, white moves first, offense, defense. And I have an article, and I'm thinking about trying to find it, because a brother brought me an article years ago, and it said that chess started in ancient Kemet. I remember reading it, but I don't remember it. And I'm thinking that if it started in ancient Kemet, I'm thinking that black moved first and white played defense. So you look at the Constitution, 13th, 14th, 15th Amendment, where they put that little piece in there about slavery is abolished, except if you get arrested, you're in prison, then you could be re-enslaved. So that's defense. Plessy versus Ferguson, that's defense. Jim Crow, that wasn't, help me understand, they're playing defense. When they created unions to keep black people out, like the first jockeys, for example, if you look at this video, the journey of the African-American athlete, where the first bicyclist, I don't remember the brother's name, but this brother was so good that the white people, that's when they had that big wheel in the front and a little wheel in the back. The white people would stand on the side and try to throw broomsticks into the wheel to make him, you know, crash and fall down so he wouldn't win all the races. The first jockeys, since they were the ones who had been enslaved Africans, remember, we were never slaves. We were enslaved. That means somebody had more power than we had through weapons and savagery. The first jockeys won all the first derbies, so they were kicked out. They were prohibited from participating in the derbies. That's defense. They kept blacks out of, as I mentioned, the unions later on. That's defense. So we've always been on offense. We just didn't know we were on offense. So I have a saying, thanks to Dr. Welsing, that says the best offense is a super great defense. And as I extend this idea, we know that you have to shift from offense to defense. I'm thinking team theory now. And she has the whole idea about the big balls and the little balls and the brown balls and the white balls. So all of this is coming, you know, because she laid down the initial foundation for understanding these concepts about teams. And I'm saying, yeah, when you think about it, these white people are on defense, and we have them on their heels. And just about everything they do is defense. But we don't know that we're on offense. I have a chart, and it's the Great Black Inventions. It says it's a beautiful chart in color. And it says black inventions live on. And when you look at it, it's all the black inventions in this country, developed by black people. And when you take all the inventions together, they could actually run a city. And of course, the white people came. And next, and on the right-hand side of this, it shows you the name of the person that invented it, the item, the date, and the patent. And then white people came and, you know, stole it. They bum-rushed all of this. And so this is offense. Now, I have a brother, Professor Walter Williams. He has the book, The Historical Origin of Christianity. And he kind of resents the use of the word Negro. He said, well, you call ourselves Negro. You know, we say it pejoratively, meaning that, you know, we're Negro means dead, you know, mentally dead. He said, but we did more when we were Negroes than we are, than we've done being so-called African. And it goes back to all these inventions. But Dr. Welsing helped me understand this shifting of offense. And you got to do offense, defense. You got to know how, when to play offense, when to play defense, and when to shift from one to the other to make that transition. But her analysis, laying it down, helps me clarify, okay, this is what we're doing. And I'm seeing now, you know, these white people, man, that's why they brought Ronald Reagan in. That was defense. Because, hey, we're on offense. Civil Rights Act, or Civil Rights Movement, that was really offense. Even though, yeah, they beat us, but hey, we came at them. So now there's another word I want to interject into this conversation, and that is counter-offense. You see, so they're playing defense, we're on offense, then they are trying to be on offense, and now we got to come back with counter-offense. We've got to take it to them. I'm looking at this. I looked at this video. It's very fascinating. It's called Air Fights. I think it was about World War II and the different pilots. There was, I think, a German pilot that came up with these 8 steps that a pilot has to engage in air fight. And one is, I think it's the second dictum, he calls them. He said the second one is never run from your opponent. You turn and you face your opponent. And this is what we have been doing. We have been facing our opponent, and everything they do, the AIDS virus. Dr. Leon Horowitz came out with the book, Emerging Viruses. AIDS virus, that's defense on the part of the white people. It was disclosed that the SARS virus that they tried to put on China, that's defense. So I hope that, you know, this is something that we got to look at, I think, a little closer. But all this is foundational, conceptual understanding brought forward to us by Dr. Welsing. And so I'm looking at all of this in this idea of the team concept, offense, defense, strategy, movement, and that's what makes her the ultimate mathematician in my estimation. So she's a glorious person. You know, she always, and Dr. Len Jeffries brought this out. We heard him speak about her. He was very good friends with her. And he said he first met her in California. She comes in, and she had this afro. And she's had her hair natural all of these years, man. I mean, that's a statement just by itself about black love. And then she talks about Asar. This goes back to ancient Kemet. There is the Immaculate Conception, Asar, Aset, and the baby Heru. And she calls Asar the Lord of the Perfect Black. And I've added to that. I said, yes, Asar is Lord of the Perfect Black. Utmost blackmagnificent Asar. You see. So she's given us a lot, man. You know, just a very, very high class human being. And if you want to look at a human being, she is a human being. And her spirit, to me, will never die. I do libation. I call her, and they told us at the memorial, you always call her name. And I will always do that. I will always call the name of Dr. Frances Cresswell, Queen Mother. And really, she should be referred to as Divine Supreme Goddess Queen Mother Frances Cresswell. That's how we should always refer to her. Divine Supreme Goddess Queen Mother Dr. Frances Cresswell.
Ashe.
Wow. Yeah, I can say a lot more about her, but you know, and you look at these different areas of the you know, the different, I call it the different selves, S-E-L-V-E-S. And I mean, she was, you know, of course, she was at the pinnacle, at the top in terms of her psychology. And this is where the war is. The war is against us psychologically. That's really where the main barrage is coming from on that white side, is psychological. She had that down. She could deflect all of that. She said, don't call yourself minority. Don't say that you are going to the crib. Don't call yourself third world. I got this friend, she was saying she was listening to a hip-hop artist in Africa. He's in the heart of Africa. He's calling himself a minority. So that clearly demonstrates that he is a victim of psychological warfare. She was, to a great extent, into the culture. She understood the value of culture. And that has a very important role to play, because culture, I know Neely Fuller says, culture is what people are doing when they're doing it. But Dr. Asa Hilliard, another grand sister, he has many books. One is, if you go online, I'm sure it's online by now, it's Free Your Mind, Return to the Source. And he says Africa is the source, and Kemet is the foundation of the source. Matter of fact, he has a tape called Kemet, The Keys. It's not Keys to the Colors. I don't remember the full title. But he says that, you know, free your mind, return to the source, and that culture is the glue to keep people, that keeps people together. And culture does simply tell you what you should do, what you should not do. It tells you, furthermore, what is right and what is wrong. You see, that's the value of culture. What is right, what is wrong, what's relevant, what's irrelevant. You know, what's for you, what's against you. So she understood to a great extent that. And then economics, I think that she was very good in terms of her economic understanding. You know, you buy, you spend money. I'm going to give you a word that I invented. Maybe I didn't. I haven't looked it up in the dictionary yet. Frugalization. Frugalize. Don't spend money where you're not wanted, where people disrespect you, and where people don't take that money and put part of it back into your community. So frugalize. Frugalization. So she understood that. And then you go to the area of education. Of course, she was at, if on a scale from 0 to 10, she was education, and I don't just mean book education. And I say in one of my books that there are three types of education. There is book education, there's street education, and there is system education, understanding the system. And she, I don't know about the street part, but I know that she understood the system from top to bottom, and she definitely had the book education. She read all the newspapers. That's why I tell black people, man, you got to read the newspaper. I was just this evening, pull up next to this brother, and I know that brothers, what they do, one of the first things a majority of them do when they get in the car, first thing they do is they put on music. Come on, man, there's war against you, and you putting on music? I know Dr. Wells, first thing she does, I will bet, turn on the news, what's going on? She wants to know. That's why she said, people, black people say, hey, yo, what's going on? What's up? Because they don't know what's going on. But she was not like that. And we heard her sister speak. Because, you know, she lost her other sister. So there were three sisters in the family. And the other sister passed. I don't know. I think it was, I don't remember when, but I know the other sister passed. But the one that is still here said that Dr. Wilson cut out news articles all the time. And that's why I was doing that as well. Saying, hey, this is important. People, we need to know this. Black, I used to say black people need to know this, so we cut out these news articles. And so in terms of education, yes. Hold on one second, brother. So in terms of education, she had education. And again, I emphasize, education doesn't mean going to school. It can mean that, but that's why I make the distinction, thanks to Dr. Wellesley, that there's a difference between having a degree and having an education. And a lot of people have degrees, but they do not have an education. So these three types of education, there may be others, but the three that I know of, system, book education, to street education. And that means you got to know what's happening in the street, you know, when you travel. So I tell brothers, don't get high, don't be walking around high in the street, smoking weed. You know, that's suicide. The white people, Dr. Wellesley understood this, the white people, the police, they bring the drugs in the community. They lace the drugs with all of these chemicals, and the chemicals are even more lethal now than they were 20, 30, 40 years ago. And that's why these babies are born emotionally underdeveloped, intellectually underdeveloped. There's these brothers and sisters smoking weed, staying up late. I don't know if people realize this. Is that the most important part of the evening, 10 p.m. to 2 p.m. to 2 a.m. 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. Because that is when Dr. Wells, and again, here we go, the melanin kicks in. And this is when the body is repairing itself. This is when the pineal gland is operating. As a matter of fact, I heard a discussion not too long ago where the guy said that when the pineal gland is not functioning at capacity, it leads to early death. So here we go. You know, black people are up partying. They're going to the party at 1 and 2 o'clock. So she understood this. As a psychiatrist, she knew about the mind and the functioning of the different parts of the brain. And she knew that drugs would destroy the different parts of the brain in terms of people fully understanding the environment that they're in. So she knew that. So in the education area, she was at the top. She was on the scale from 0 to 10. I would give her a 10 on that. So psychological, I give her a 10. Culture, probably maybe an 8, 7, 8. Economics, 10. Education, 10. Health, nah, question. You know, it's questionable. Maybe 6, 7. But then we go into the next round would be the spiritual. And she's definitely a spiritual person. Because spiritual to me means having, first of all, being connected with your racial relatives. To have that understanding that we are, because of our melanin, we are all racial relatives no matter where we are on the globe. So she understood that. That's why she talked about melanin. And she always spoke. She was always a keynote speaker at the melanin conferences. She understood the value of melanin. And she said, how do you protect your melanin? Can you protect your melanin? And then you go into the social and then the political. So she was really, so I say, man, she's a divine supreme goddess, queen mother, utmost blacknificent, Dr. Frances Cress Wellesley. So I'll just conclude that. I mean, I don't know if I can say anything else about her, but she definitely had an impact on my learning. And as I said, I met her, I don't know if I met her actually in 75. I heard her speak in 75, but I heard her again last May. Professor Griff brought her to Atlanta, she and Dr. Marimba Ani, and they were both on the same program, and I heard both of them speak. And then Dr. Welsing was at the NBUC, that's National Black United Front Conference. She spoke then, and man, I got a chance to take a picture with her. I think it's on my website. I thought it was lost. And I said to her, I said, Dr. Welsing, I heard you speak in 1970. I said, 40 years ago. I think it was 1975. She said, wow, we really go back. I said, yeah, we do. So I really love that sister, man. I will never forget her. And anytime I do libation, yeah, I'm calling her name. And we ask these ancestors to come and help us and give us guidance. Give us the understanding, the strength to fight against the enemy so that we can achieve our goal. You know, our mission is, you know, I'm going to interject my personal ideas now. You know, there's no other reason for us to be on the planet other than to solve this problem. She talks about bringing justice to the planet. So that would be in the political area, to bring justice to the planet. But on my, I have this paradigm, and under political, in my paradigm, it says white people, this on the right side of the board, there are like five aspects on the right side of the board under political. The first one is that they are always, that's A-L-L, always at war. That's what they are. They're always at war. The second one is, and Dr. Welsing and Nellie Fuller understood this, the second aspect is confusion. Create a lot of confusion amongst the people. Have the people helter-skelter, pell-mell, running around all over the place, bumping into each other. No focus. Right? When you don't have focus, you don't know where you're going. The next one is, and this is the one that I love, that the white people never want you to come to a conclusion. Just keep doing the same thing over and over again, never stopping to think, to come, well, hey, where is this going? Where are we going with this? Where is this leading? You know, just stay locked into a paradigm that has no end game. So now I'm interjecting my stuff into this. You know, no end game. Just keep doing that. Fine. See, my end game is black liberation. That's the last move in my end game. So those are the three so far. Always at war, the white people. Continue to create confusion. Make sure people never come to a conclusion. And the last two, destruction and death. Now, I am totally against television. I don't have a television. I kick the TV out of the door. When the white people say, oh, you got to have this certain box and you got to do this, I say, yo, you can have your TV. There's nothing on it. And I heard Dr. Welsing years ago speak the statement about the media and television. She said there's nothing on there but death and dying and death and dying and death and dying. And I have added, you know, nothing but sex, depravity, backstabbing. I mean, if you really want to learn about white people, just really look at television intelligently if you're going to look at it at all. But when I heard her say that, man, it sent a chill to me. She said, death and dying, death and dying, death and dying. That's what it is. And so I think those are my comments about her. And if black women could, if they had to emulate any sister on the planet, to carry themselves with dignity, it would be Dr. Welsing. This whole thing about the mini skirts and what's this other thing they wear, these little string things and, you know, their boobs hanging out and all of that. Yo, man, where you get that from? Who taught you how to do that? You know who taught them how to do that? The white people taught them how to do that. So Dr. Welsing walks with dignity. She's a proud African woman. And this is the model that sisters should emulate, Dr. Frances Cress Welsing. And in the future, now we know how the white people are. They're going to finally, somewhere down the line, they're going to try to make her an integrationist and, you know, do all kind of alter her image, distort what she had to say, misinterpret it, but I think we have so much information it might be hard to do that, but look out for that. You know, you might see her, they're so tricky, they might put in a perm somewhere down the line. So, you know, just look out. I have this thing that war is being waged against us. War is being waged against us. Now, when you know war is being waged against you by the white man and the white woman, it comes in different forms and tricks. So, don't be deceived. Because if you are deceived, you will be a victim of the different forms and tricks that they bring forward. But worse, for those who don't even know that war is being waged against them, not only will they surely be defeated, they will be killed. Furthermore, not only will they be defeated and killed when they don't even know war is being waged against them, they will be duped, unwitting co-conspirators in their early demise. So Dr. Welsing has enabled me to come up with that understanding. Not only is war being waged against us, but know that it's coming in different, has different forms, that there are many tricks embedded in the different forms, And if we don't know that, we surely will be defeated and killed. But if we don't even know that war is being waged against us, not only will we be defeated, we will be co-conspirators. In fact, we will accelerate our own subtle suicide when we don't even know that war is being waged against us. So I think that Dr. Welsing would say, I don't know, I'm just surmising that she would say, the perfect slave is the one who doesn't even think that he's a slave. But what she tried to do was to get us out of a slave mentality, something that was superimposed on us by external forces. And so what she tried to do was elevate us. In fact, she elevated our understanding to see the global dynamic that we're involved with. And so you have to I think it's important to understand how the system is set up to destroy us. And so she laid that out for us in her book, her great book, The ISIS Papers, and in all of her lectures. One of the things I love about her, she didn't deviate. She was steadfast. You know, this is what's up. This is how it's going. This is how it's going down. This is what you need to be aware of. This is what you need to do. So she had the solutions for us. So I'll conclude my remarks about Dr. Welsing there.
Context of white supremacy. Dr. Kamau Cambon, always a pleasure to hear from him. You can again visit his website, KamauCambon.org. KamauCambon.org. Should be linked if you are listening at Black Talk Radio Network. You'll see, you can just click his name if you are listening there, and it'll take you right to the website. He has, as I said, you can see some of the articles that he's written. He has his books for sale, many of them we've talked about before, The Blackest Book, and many other commentaries that he has written, some that we've discussed previously on the program. You can just go right to the website and pick those copies up there. You can contact him directly if you are so inclined. Just go to the website, KamauCambon.org. Context of white supremacy. I didn't laugh, but there are many, many things I could touch on from what he shared, but one of the things that stood out when he was talking about encouraging black people to check the news, check news sites, it stood out to me as important because, number one, Dr. Welsing talked about that all the time on this program. Read the newspaper. I mean, she said it almost every time that she came to this program, in addition to black self-respect and refrain from name calling other black people, but checking the news. And she would, I feel like almost every time she would reference Dick Gregory, and she would talk about the time that she was going to buy newspapers and Dick Gregory was present. And Dick Gregory, I guess she was buying two or three newspapers, and Dick Gregory bought more newspapers than she did. I think she bought like maybe, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 newspapers, and Dick Gregory bought like, you know, 10, 20 of them. I think that is extremely important just to kind of keep that in mind. I had a listener contact me just recently within the last couple days, and he said, it seems like on the cows, you all spend a lot of time talking about different news reports and playing news articles. Certainly that's a big component of the compensatory call-in, which it is. And he said how, and this was a younger person, he said he was in his 20s, he said How would you encourage, or what would you recommend for me to just ways that I can start doing that? And that was one of the exact things that I said to him. I said, anytime that you get in a vehicle, as opposed to turning on music, if you, I don't know if you have to commute, if you commute like for work, or if you have to commute for school, or whatever the case may be, devote at least, you know, 20% of your time to listening to the news. Find a station, if it's a local station, where they play news, talk about the news, you should listen to it. If you don't want to listen in your vehicle, or if you take the train or something like that, if you're not specifically driving to work, which you can do if you have a portable device, which many people do at this point, you can download news programs there. A lot of the content that they have on NPR and a lot of the other news talk programs, you can download, you can stream the material, so you can listen to it that way. You can download it and just have it on your device, your player, whatever the case may be. That's one way that you can keep up with the news. I would certainly encourage, if you are getting dressed, like before you're leaving, if you're going to school, if you're going to work, and you have a television, you can have the news on. You can have your local news on. Find out what's happening in your particular area, wherever you happen to be in the world. If you like national programs, certainly they have a wealth of national news programs that you could be listening to, following, paying attention to what's happening. CNN, lots of other channels. You can listen to Black Talk Radio Network, Mr. Scotty Reed. They have news programs where they're talking about things that are happening locally, nationally, globally. It's a myriad of different ways that you could be doing this. As you're getting dressed to start your day, prepare to go out, do whatever you're going to do. You can look at the newspaper. And this is when, even if you don't read the whole newspaper, and I've heard white people make this suggestion, if you are pressed for time or whatever the case happens to be, even if you just are making a glance at the newspaper, check out some of the reports. What are they talking about? What is the headline? A lot of times now, they will have like snippets of the article where it kind of tells you, this is what the post is about. These are some of the key topics that are going to be made in this report. They have that a lot of times because they know a lot of people are feeling time crunched, so they might not be able to read the entire post. That's one of the things that you can do. And I know for myself, even though I do spend a lot of time checking news reports, I will just glance at the newspaper and see what they're talking about. I'll just look and see, well, okay, what's the big headline story? What are some of the recurring stories that I'm seeing being reported in the news? Just little things like that. Even sometimes I'll see something, if I look at like the local newspaper, because I've said consistently I sometimes do a poor job checking the local newspaper, I'll just check and I'll see something and be like, oh my gosh, I didn't even know about that. And then I can, boop, once I get some free time, if I'm in transit or whatever, once I get settled down, I'm back at my residence for the day, I can go online, I can look, I can find it and do more research about it. That has happened tons of times, just taking, you know, 2-3 minutes to just glance over. You could just kind of flip through, look at the story. Okay, boom, 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 boom. Just be informed. I know Dr. Welsing's sister, Lauren Cress Love, when I talk, I'm not sure if she emphasized it when she was on the program, but I know she said it to me when we spoke. And she said, when I went to Dr. Welsing's house, this is Lauren Cress Love, she said when I went to her house, man, she had articles and notes about all kinds of stuff when she was checking the news and just being informed. That is so, so important. There is a war being waged against black people worldwide 24/7. One of the most important things that you can do is make an effort to be informed, paying attention, read the news or listen to the news or watch the news, however, whatever your medium is, really make that an important part of what you do. And I would say if that's something that you can do in the presence, if you have offspring, oh man, that is awesome. Counter-racist work right there where they can see that you make it a serious priority to be informed. Again, I'm not saying that every time that you get in your vehicle or whatever it is, if you're in transit, going to school, going to work, that you have to listen to the news. But that should be at least try to build so that if it's 5 days a week you're in transit, maybe you can start out 2 days a week. 2 out of the 5, I will make sure that I'm listening to the news. And then if you can build so that maybe 3 out of 5, maybe 4 out of 5, or maybe you split, maybe on the way to work, I'll listen to the news. And then maybe on the way home, I'll listen to music or, you know, whatever you do. But that's one of the things that you can do that I think is so important. And I know Dr. Kamal Kanban and Dr. Welzing would co-sign on that wholeheartedly. It is vital to pay attention to what's happening locally, nationally, globally. That's one of the things that I did not do when I was more confused about racism, white supremacy. I did not read the newspaper or check the news or what have you. I just didn't do it. I didn't devote any time to it. You would be amazed how much material is about racism, white supremacy directly in the news all the time. Read, read, read. Anywho, if folks have commentary that they would like to share relative to any, I guess, aspect of what we have been discussing, talking about, certainly anything that you heard from Dr. Kamal Kanban, feel free, his commentary on Dr. Welzing. If it's commentary related to some of the things that we talked about earlier in the program related to Kevin Durant and his exit. Someone posted in the news, they posted an article where a white person is burning, I guess, some sort of effigy of Kevin Durant, where they're lynching him. It looks like they have a rifle and are firing rounds at his jersey or what have you. The same, you know, tacky antics that we've seen before. But if you have comments on that, if you have comments on the colorism aspect that we talked about with Michael Rappaport, you can feel free to chime in on that as well. The number to dial is 641-715-3640. And the code is 564-943-pound. Press *6 if you would like to participate. Once again, that number, 641-715-3640. The code is 564-943-pound. Press *6 if you would like to participate. And I definitely want to make sure I get in one more time. That is not the entirety of the conversation, that audio segment that you heard from Dr. Kanban. That is a portion of the conversation. And I think he said that he might be willing to make the entire thing available if that is the case, and if he's willing to do so, I will let folks know how they can access it. I'll post a link or, you know, whatever he does, if he wants to make the whole thing available. But I will let folks know when I find out additional information. All the folks who dialed in who have a hand up, if you have commentary you would like to share, line should be open. We'll just do it that way. Feel free to chime in. Just watch the background noise if you know you have things going on behind you. All the folks who dialed in should be with us.
Hello. Ladies first.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, thank you. Yeah, I just want to touch on what Dr. Kamal Kanban was saying about Dr. Francis Cross Wilson. I remember back in the 90s, every day when I used to come home from work, I used to turn on the Phil Donahue show, and most days it didn't really have that much going on, and I would just see what it was about, and then I'd turn it off. But this one day, I saw this regal black woman sitting in a chair with his afro, and she looked so noble. And Phil Donahue was, quoting some of her book, and he was talking about the balls and stuff. And of course, white folks in the audience, they were twittering and giggling like they always do when somebody brings up sex ed. They're like a bunch of those school children and stuff. And they were asking her questions, and they were making comments at her, and she dodged every one of them like a bullet. I mean, she was badass. I'm sorry for cousin, but I'm like, who is this woman? And, you know, I never seen anybody like her before, you know, and it wasn't at that time. Of course, we didn't have the internet and everything, and it wasn't until much later that, you know, I found out who she was. And also I want to say, all around the country, this past holiday, I always look at the news on Facebook and on the other sites and stuff, and they had about 5 or 6 things going down where white folks just clowned big time
I think it was somewhere either down in Texas or South Carolina. They had some kind of country club. It was over 100 of them, and somebody got shot, and they was fighting. And then once it was at a Kenny Chesney concert, a bunch of them got to fighting. And I think in Columbus, Ohio, they had a close. I think it was in Columbus, Ohio. They had to close the fireworks area because they was the whites were fighting and stuff. And then it was somewhere in Michigan. And they're gonna try to talking about it was them Chicago from the hood, but they were just saying. I mean, that was the commentators were just saying stuff like that. But the pictures, all you saw was all whites. And like, you know, they all were trying to put that stuff on us. But, I mean, all over the country yesterday, they were just clowning big time. And I love to see when they kill and hurt one another. And thank you for letting me talk. That's all I want to say right now.
Have you heard?
Yes, sir.
Absolutely, great Gus, great show, Gus. Dr. Campbell is right on point. This is where he spoke about Dr. Wells. And, I just can't believe he said the first time he ever saw her speak live was in 1975, and it just shows you how monumental the amount of work she's done. Because I think I'm old, but I wasn't even born in 1975 yet, so it's like wow. As far as the basketball stuff, heard a lot of hatred spewed at the event around New York City today. Very much in line with the same way it was spewed at LeBron when he went to go play in Miami. They hate him, they hope they lose. And you go from having probably the most popular team last year. I mean, in all my years, I never saw so many Golden State fans just pop out the blue here in New York. And, you see the Terry sneakers and the jerseys and everything. And now it's like they hate them, which is understood based off the way the game is played. But I think as having a better understanding of racism, I think a black man should be able to go play where he wants to. And make as much as you can. I have never heard of any other black person, and it was really strange because when you kind of mentioned that report, make any reference to Perry's color or being light skinned. I've never heard it. Not here in New York, at least amongst the people I speak to, and I speak to quite a few people about basketball. He's been one of everyone's favorite players. They love him. They love his dad. I don't think his mother is white. I don't think that he's mixed race, in my opinion. He's just a light-skinned black guy. His grandparents might have had some white classification in them, but I don't think he's a white person or a half-white person. I think he's a full-fledged black person. However, Klay Thompson, on the other hand, he has a white mother. He doesn't get that same type of hatred that I've heard from that report with Rappaport. But I think it was a very good show. And also, as far as the news goes, I'm sure as you know, Gus, I send you stuff all the time that I read, circulate, usually while I'm working. And you're right on point with the newspaper because I tell you, one thing I miss about working at a law firm is all those law review journals from about every big city and state has one. And, you just hit the library up and grab about five or six. And, man, it's all about all the cases that are about racism, just seeing how some of this stuff plays out and making comparisons to the same things that happen to white people is just astounding. It's impossible, I think, any paper in America to pick up and not find something about racism, especially if you're looking for it, you'll find it. But now I'll be my life.
Absolutely. I can co-sign, all of the above. Mr. Thomas in New York, he does send a lot of information, as do many, many, many Cal's listeners from all over the world, whether it's emails, social media. They will post stuff on the Facebook pages, or they'll tweet things to me. Tons of folks, Bruce Fine, and just lots of folks. And for years now, many, many folks have mailed a lot of material. Some of it that I use on the compensatory call-in on the weekend, some of those audio clips, they come from you all. That is absolutely, I certainly appreciate all of the effort. But absolutely, if you're looking for it, even if you're not looking for it, the racism is going to be there in the newspaper. And Dr. Welsing used to emphasize that all the time. If you look at the news, they are constantly talking about the system of white supremacy. Sometimes it'll be explicitly stated as such. Other times they'll use other terms, you know, prejudice or discrimination or racially motivated or what have myriad of other terms, but you will know this is what they're talking about is white supremacy, racism. And even a lot of times it's being indirectly discussed. Even a lot of reports where they don't mention race specifically, it still is informing you about racism, white supremacy. Just really make an effort to check the news on a regular basis. It is astounding. And that's one of the things that I really had just tremendous regard for, both Dr. Welsing and Dr. Kamau Kamban and many others, is that when they give their presentation on racism, white supremacy, and state their views, just both of them, they make sure to provide evidence, and they back it not just with historical context, but with things that are happening right now in the news. That's something that I really try to borrow from them and utilize myself, just using things that are happening right now so that we don't think when we're talking about white supremacy, racism, this is just something that happened, you know, 50 years ago, back in Dr. King's days, back in Rosa Parks' days, Ida B. Wells. This is something from 100 years right now, 2016. Other folks that we have not heard from, if you dialed in, you should be with us.
May I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Good evening. This is the female caller from New York. First of all, good evening to the callers and listeners, and to you, Gus. And thank you for having Dr. Kamban on the program this evening. I missed him, and I missed his insight into his thing, into many things. And it was like a double treat to have him speak on divine goddess, queen, mother, Dr. Francis Cress Welsing. I felt like both of them were in the room. With regard to the analogy he made about how whites are actually on the defense and black people are on the offense, I have always had that thought in my melanin, but I've never really expressed it because I thought people would think that, especially counter-racists, in all that we observe and we analyze and we break down and we try to sort of just demystify and eliminate confusion about, that would not even be logical. But as I tell my clients all the time about their hair, that there has to be something great and powerful and strong about your natural hair for there to be so many industries to try to suppress the way it looks, for there to be so many messages to tell you that you can't wear it this way or you can't wear it that way. One of the young ladies who recently went to the Marines and actually sat in front of, I guess what you would call some sort of a tribunal or something, was about how black women wear their hair in the Marines. And this is a friend of mine, and she set precedent, and they relaxed the, I don't mean to use that word, but they changed, modified the regulations on how black women can wear their hair in the Marines. They can wear locks and they can wear braids now. So I said to her, I don't really think that you understand how important and how powerful that is. I said, because you see, usually, you know, depositions and all of the things that you did, you know, in front of these supposedly important military people, usually they're talking about war and crimes and injustices and things against people and budgets, and they're creating policy around those things. This was about black hair. So when he touched on that point about how we are really on the offense and they are on the defense, that resonated in me because I've always believed that. There has to be something awesome and powerful and great about a people who everything was stolen from them and who has the world looking upon us as if we are nothing when, as Dr. Wellesley said, we are the original people on the planet. And we should walk and be dignified like that. So when he said that, it totally resonated with me, and I appreciated hearing that from him. And I don't know, Gus, if you have a little time later on, I'll stay on the line. I just kind of had a field note that I wanted to share because I experienced something last week, and I'm kind of confused about it. And I want to make sure that I'm kind of looking at this from the right perspective, and I just would like to get your opinion on it. But if not, that's fine. I'll save it for Saturday. And that's all I had. I'll mute my line.
Oh, for sure. We'll definitely make time if it's a question or I don't scenario, whatever it is you want to present, we'll definitely make sure we make time for that today.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Wow, just to kind of piggyback off of what the sister was saying about hairstyles, one thing that I've learned about how we wear our hair, one thing I've learned about white supremacy is whatever white people don't want you to do is what you should be doing. Whatever they are staunchly against as a black person or non-white person is exactly what you should be doing. And when she brought up the way that we wear our hair, it just really made me think there is definitely something to our hair beyond just making a visual statement. A lot of the hairstyles, like when you look at the flat top hairstyle, also if you look in Egypt, they had a crown called the blue crown, which is identical to a hairstyle that the Tutsi males wear to this day. So the vast majority of popular hairstyles in black culture were actually crowns that were worn by nobility and sometimes kings and queens in different African traditional societies. And definitely there is something to the way that you express yourself with your hair. And that's one thing that I learned when I went through initiation. I have my hair in locks, and I learned the importance of locks in Kemetic culture. And that's something that I explained to my son. He actually had gotten locks himself. He had been wearing them for about a little over a year. And he had told me once his hair locked, he started to have a lot of vivid dreams and a lot of different spiritual experiences that he relayed to me. And he has said a lot of what I discussed with him as far as the spiritual power of wearing your hair in locks and the responsibility as far as spiritually speaking that comes with it, he got a much deeper understanding when he actually did so. And he recently actually combed his locks out, which was something he didn't think he could do, but I told him how to do it and he did it. And he had just been going through some things, and he felt like he was carrying that energy in the crown of his head. So I said, well, you can either cut your locks off or you can comb them out, which he did. And as soon as he combed them out, he felt an immediate difference in how he felt spiritually in the crown of his head. So these things are very, very important. To speak about Michael Rapaport, I would say he's probably one of the best white racists you can watch to understand how refinement works. Even when I looked at Beats, Rhymes, and Life, the documentary he did on Tribe Called Quest, rest in peace to Fife, I just felt like he reveled in the animosity between the different members in the group and hearing other artists take on the animosity within the group. And he interviewed De La Soul. I believe it was the DJ he had interviewed, and they were discussing how much it hurt them to see them in such disarray and things like that. So I just think he's one of the most refined white supremacists ever. I don't know how Spike Lee was able to get past that tacky, trashy comment that he made. And if you look at all of his movies, all of the choices of his most popular films, he's always either raping a black woman, playing a white supremacist, or killing black people. And to me, when you talk about looking at a person's body of work to kind of get an understanding of their psychopathology, I think he's a case study in something like that. And Dr. Kamal Kanbon, one of my favorite guests you have, I think he's one of the greatest revolutionary thinkers, and it's always a pleasure and honor to hear him speak. That term that he coined, grandcestor, I actually utilize it, and I always give him credit for that. And actually, the first place I used it was on a public access show that I did in dedication to Dr. Ben. I appeared on it, and I used that term, and I gave him the credit for it. And every time I use that term, I give him the credit, because I think he's absolutely right and accurate in everything that he described as far as what a Grandcestor is. And there's only certain people who deserve that moniker. Dr. Ben absolutely did. Dr. Welsing always will. And there are others as well. But I just think he's phenomenal. His thought process, his understanding of the way the system works. Matter of fact, there's a great little clip of him on YouTube where they say the most serious African man in the world, I think is what it's called. It's about maybe less than 10-minute segment he did on C-SPAN. That's mind-blowing. So if anybody can get to peek that, it's still on there. It's very popular. He put it down on that. And I just say, for now, I'll say thank you for taking my call. Oh, the other thing I wanted to bring up, too, is when you talked about the news, I found it very interesting and very true what you said by Dr. Cambron and Dr. Welsing in reference to the news. When I was younger, I didn't really watch the news much except for getting, like, the weather, simply because I felt it was just too depressing for me to even pay attention to. And as I got older and more refined in my understanding of white supremacy, it is one of the most important things you can do, because it helps you be aware as close to up to the minute as possible as to how these white people are functioning to try and destroy us. When I watch the news now, I would say 85 to 90% is white supremacy. It's just how it's presented, what they're saying, the subject matter, and how their report plays out. But I would say 85 to 90% of what I see that's not the weather, and even in traffic, is white supremacy. It's either white people jockeying for position against other white people as to whose variation of white supremacy will reign supreme, or refined practices of white supremacy against black people specifically and non-white people in general. So I think that's one of the greatest things that you've ever discussed and propagated, is the whole idea of really reading and studying the news and being as abreast as possible, up to the minute if possible, on current events. And with that, I'll mute my line. Thanks again.
For sure. For sure. Folks, we have not heard from anybody who had a hand up that we haven't heard from who had commentary. Feel free.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes. I just want to say good evening to everybody. Thanks, Gus, for playing that clip of Dr. Cambron. Again, he is a titan to me. One of the best guests you've had on your on the program, along with Dr. Chris Welsing. I would like to say, basically, I wanted to hit on a few things, particularly with these white people again that play sports that black people are known for playing, particularly basketball, football, white people that are into hip hop. White people that are in sexual arrangements or tragic arrangements with, non-white people, particularly black people, white people that, speak a lot of so-called slang or whatever that black people are known for speaking, we really, and I want to say we should really be teaching this to especially young kid or children, the younger people. Because I have a feeling that I think a lot of older people are more confused, or old and young people are confused. But I think a lot of older people are just stuck in their ways as far as viewing white people and how they practice racism. But we have to be really pay particular attention to, white people that take part in these things that I just said. As far as like sports, it's kind of like I wanted to relate this to I have two offspring. One is a little older, one is a teenager, one is like 8 years old. So I try to teach them both, but I definitely focus more on the 16-year-old. But I just try to tell her how amazing it is, how racism is basically inundated in, all aspects of life, and sports too as well. And I talk about her, about like Floyd Mayweather, how, he gets treated similarly to how Jack Johnson was treated way back in when he was fighting, he was still alive, and Muhammad Ali, and I just try to, you know, tell how it evolves as far as how racism is practiced with these people. Even with, I wanted to throw this in too. I'm kind of going all over the place, but I noticed that with prominent black people that are in sports, something typically happens to them, something bad or some type of scandal or something. And I pray that, you know, like LeBron James, I hope it doesn't happen to him. But, man, I just feel like white people are really going to be going after him even more, that he, you know, he's on top of the world. He's making, I'm not on top of the world, but he's very popular and stuff like that. Things are going good. I hope he doesn't get caught up in any drugs, or he raped some white person, or did it, or had some type of infidelity against his wife, or molested a child. Or, I don't know. I just hope they don't try to bring something upon him in the near future. And my last thing I wanted to do, again, is my thoughts are kind of all over the place. I see a lot of people that are, you know, saying anti-racist things on the internet and on TV, just celebrities and stuff. But, you know, they're teaching some of the principles that Neely Fuller and, you know, Dr. Wilson teaches. But the thing that they don't go by or don't utilize themselves is, again, arguing and name-calling black people. That's like one of the things, and that's something, again, I struggle with myself, but I just noticed that's like one of the one thing that quite a few of us really need to tighten up on, because we're really quick to, you know, verbally assault another black person. And, you know, again, we're ignoring or we're not focusing on white supremacy when we're doing that. So I think we really need to take note of that. But I just noticed that with a lot of people that are, you know, popular on the internet and on TV now, just still name calling a lot, quite a bit. And also my daughter, my oldest daughter, you know, we get in the car sometimes, and I don't even play the music, and like most of the time I put on the Cows. And then one time, and then I told my daughter, I'm calling into a radio show to, you know, speak my thoughts. She's like, oh, what are you calling the Cows? And I was kind of happy. I was like, okay, you've been paying attention. You've been listening a little bit. And I just, you know, just reiterated what it, you know, what the Cows stood for. So I'm thinking a lot of this stuff is starting to sink in or whatever. So, and the only thing I still a little concerned with my younger daughter, because, again, that white, you know, white supremacist effect on me for my whole life. I'm like, man, is she going to get around some white people at school and you say, my dad listens to this and my dad teaches that? And, you know, but, you know, you can't get worried about stuff like that. But anyway, that's all I have for now. Thank you.
Awesome. Awesome. I think that has been brought out before with children. A lot of times things you can do is planting seeds, and if it is true, even if they don't recognize or appreciate it at that very moment, often, given time, truth is truth. People will see the value in accurate information, even if it takes them a little while to recognize that, oh yeah, Dad was not talking crazy. There is a system of racism, and that is going to be a problem for me. Anybody that we have not heard from, anybody who had a hand up, who had commentary, folks, please do not wait till the last minute. If you have commentary, things you would like to share on what you heard or other observations, go ahead and get your hand up. Anyone we haven't heard from who called in with a hand up?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. I thought, so there was, like, Dr. Wilson used to talk about here a lot at Howard. I used to go, I started to think about here a lot, like trying to come up, well, just thinking about it. I wasn't trying to come up with something. And then I started to think about my upbringing in Southern Africa, and I remembered, like, when we were kids, even that whenever our hair was cut, we were told that you would have to, like, pick up your hair and, like, you would have to, like, burn it or, like, dispose of it, like, because we were told, like, that, like, people could do things with your hair, like witchcraft or something like that. And it was something that I thought was sort of like a joke, but people still did it. But when I became an adult, adults were still doing it, like, holding dear to their hair, even though they've cut it. But then I started to think about it even deeper, and I realized that in my language, that the word for hair, so like the way the word is made up for hair, the beginning of the word is the same as the beginning for the word for medicine. So like hair is like muriri, and like medicine is muriana. So I started to think about hair as like medicine, and like Dr. Walton was saying something similar, but she would talk about sort of like how, you know, your hair, you could use it for like energy, you don't know, like antennas and whatnot, and how you could like sync with the universe and everything. And well, I didn't think that was a coincidence about the words. I just haven't had time to sort of like go back and like talk with people and try to get more information about like why is this, why are these words so similar? And like, what is the power of hair? Because I think that's something that's very important. About the reading. Like, she would always have these pamphlets. And I tried to do a good amount of reading, but she would always have, like, stories in there and, like, articles in there that I had, like, that were just amazing. And so I think reading is, like, so important. Like, it's only recently that I started to sort of focus on, like, racism, white supremacy, deeply, but I've always been reading, but, like, now I know, like, everything that I used to read was about that. So even if, and I don't know, like, now that I'm sort of, like, a working person and, like, a professional or whatever that can be considered, I don't know how people can go without it. Like, there's so much to read, like, everywhere, like, in school and in work, there's so much to read. And they even give you more to read on all these things that you need to know. So, I guess just to say, like, reading is fundamental. That's all I had to say. Thank you for taking the call.
For sure. Anybody that attended any of Dr. Welsing's lectures at the Cress Welsing Institute over the years, I think she notoriously provided handouts that had lots and lots of news clippings. That was one of the things that certainly will remain with me for some years to come. The last institute that she conducted in December of 2015, in that handout, one of the pieces that she provided was about that CRISPR technology and Jennifer Doudna, I think that's how you say her name, the white woman who came up with it, and how she thought of herself as a freak because she is melanin deficient. This white woman, suspected white supremacist, and she grew up around a lot of non-white people, and she thought of herself as a freak because of her pale skin. That's how the article began and ended, where they're talking about this is the person who came up with this CRISPR technology, and because of thinking of herself as a freak, that drove her to become bookish and scientific. He said, our enemies are scientific in their terrorism against black people, but that drove her to creating this CRISPR technology, which in and of itself some people might think of as freakish. And then the article, it comes to an end, and it says she always thinks of herself back growing up in Hawaii around all these non-white people, aka a freak. She included that handout, that article, in the last handout that she gave at the Welsing Institute that I had faxed over to her. So absolutely, and I can just repeat again,
the relationship that I had with Dr. Welsing, it was totally a connection around information. Me just looking to learn as much as I could from her about racism, white supremacy, and then sharing information, things that I came across, things that you all, articles and things, reports that you all found, and then the same, just anything that I came across and trying to share that information with her. Just absolutely pay attention to the news. It is hugely important. That's certainly one that Dr. Welsing and Dr. Cambon would encourage us. That's something that will help us solve this problem, I think. Did we get everybody who had a hand up that we have not heard from? If anybody, if you're listening in and you did, you know, had something that you wanted to add based on any portion of the commentary, feel free to dial in, place a hand up. If we got everybody, I know, folks, if you have other comments, we can get that in as well. And so I think the female caller in New York, she had said she had something she wanted to share. The person 1902, did you have commentary that you wanted to share?
Yes, can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Hi to the callers. Good evening, everybody. Yeah, the person that I'm coined a phrase, the Trump effect. I have things on my mind as of late. For about, you know, a year or two before she passed, I really got to know who she was through the house and mainly during the morning. She would call in, she had a free line to call in, and I was anticipating that was a year. Hearing her voice, and it felt like it was just like a warm feeling, because I hadn't felt that. I have African American mother.
Your line is breaking up a little bit. I don't know if it's just me, but it seems like it's not clear. I don't know if you're on a headset or what the case, but it's just breaking up a little bit.
Have you heard now?
If you want to, maybe you can start over with your anecdote. I know you said she had an open line and you would call in and gave you a warm feedback, but if you could kind of start over just to make sure that everybody is clear on what you're sharing, sir.
Can you hear me again now?
We can hear you so far. Yes, sir.
Yes,
sir.
Okay. I would anticipate her call depending on the subject, because she was going to call and give her side or her aspirations, and that's when I found out about her mentor, Mr. Fuller, and that's how I found out about this Kyle's. And I've always thought, you know, I've had a single parent raised by a woman by herself. So my imagery, just like any other single male raised by their mother, it depends on the mother and how she relays her information or lack thereof. Dr. Welsing, me and my mother would have we had a bumpy relationship, and it was Dr. Welsing within the last, I'm in my upper 30s and my late 30s, and she kind of, I was always confused about what the relationship was between me and my mother and my sister. I was the only male. And she really put it in perspective, and it made me feel good, because I never felt that way about talking to a black woman outside my grandmother, who had passed when I was in high school, freshman year. And I listened to her last. I was there when she called into the show. Well, Carl knows I had her on the 2nd of January, and I listened to that morning. Over the weekend, it was a weather Friday. I listened to that live, Carl Nelson. And after that, you know, I got on, you know, when I was hearing, because I'm all, you know, her information, Google already knew, hey, she's in the hospital, blah, blah. And we all know the story. And when I was at work that next day, I mean, I'm going to tell you what, I wasn't blubbering, crying, but man, I tell you what, it was hard for me. I was shed a tear here and there, and I was wondering why. It would just come out of the blue, and I knew why. I was not going to hear her voice anymore. She's very important, you know, right now, late 30s, to really understand what this is all about. And I'll sit back and wonder and think about what will the white supremacist you can go through all the history of Malcolm X, Martin Luther King Jr., and all the other black.
Your line
breaking
is
up.
It's breaking up. Yeah, I don't know if you're. If something
I'm sorry, man.
Yeah, you're just breaking in.
I can call. Like, let me try to figure it out and call back.
Okay. As soon as you dial back in, we'll get you right back in so you can pick up and continue with your sharing. I'll look out for him on the switchboard as soon as he dials back in. If while we're waiting for him to call back. I'm sure a whole lot of people, I remember the Facebook posts and the programs that we were doing around the time, right around when she passed. It was just a colossal loss for many, many black people around the world. And even, I can say, non-white people, individuals who are non-white, non-black, who still had read her work and benefited from her teachings and understanding racism, white supremacy. It was just a titanic loss. But again, I would hope that if people have some sort of regard, if Dr. Welsing meant something to us, then we will appreciate and apply what she dedicated so many years to trying to do, and that is inform and heal black people in the way that we conduct ourselves in solving the problem, racism, white supremacy. The caller who's just having some technical issues, I think he dialed back in. We'll see if his line is clear so he can continue with his commentary, and then we'll get the female caller in New York as well with what she wanted to present. Let's see. The male caller, are you back with us, sir? Let's see if we have things fixed up.
Have you heard?
Yes, sir.
Okay, I'm going to try to shorten this up. I apologize. Bad reception. Long story short, Dr. Welsing really, really, really meaned a lot to me. And I know everybody says that, but she really opened my eyes to not blame my mother or the black women around me. I had lost that figure since maybe 94 when my grandmother passed. I wonder about the might. How will they show it? They're showing it now with the vote in the UK, Donald Trump emerging through the ranks of the media. I mean, where they're, you know, I mean, it's obvious, like, they wouldn't let Howard Dean yell, but they can let him spew anything. I'm seeing that, and that's when the Trump effect comes in. So I go to myself, why am I feeling like this? Not hysterical, but just, hey, if white men went and got guns, maybe I need to start practicing self-defense. Maximum, I think it was emergency code, or Mr. Fuller, what do you would say? And how will they show their might? And I'm scared to say this. I hope the black woman, one woman that I look at in the media, or when I look at, is it just me, or Michelle Obama becomes beautiful and beautiful every time I see her? She's vibrant. Like, every time they put a camera on her, she just glows. She really glows to me. And I look at that, and I look at white supremacy, and I go, okay, how would they show their muscle here? I worry about our president towards the end of his term. I worry about his daughter and his wife and his children. And I always sit back and go, what will make black people flip out? And I thought about her, and that's what would make me have a fit. I would have to sit down for 24 and not talk to people, really get my thoughts in order. If something would, God forbid, anything would happen. But I worry about our mental state as people. We flip out over anything. You know, I'm not saying anything. Let me retract that. We don't take the appropriate approach to the problem, from Freddie Gray to, you know, rioting and all that. Look at all the times people rioted over our black elites being massacred. And I look at that and I go, okay, I just worry about it. I really, really think about it. And I wonder myself how I'm going to react. United, you know, independent, you know, I try to, and I talk to my friends about it. Oh man, you don't know what you're talking, you know, kind of jive stuff. And it's like, you know, if you are, and I just say this to black men, black males, and Dr. Kemp, you know, who you just had on. And I've seen that C-SPAN clip. Yeah, I'm not speaking on the way he was coming at it because he was coming strong. But protect yourself if you can do it. Because if something was to happen, like I'm thinking, I would think the flip out. And another thing about the Obama effect is that white people got, a single white man got guns he has enough guns to give a whole town at least one. You know, at least every white person, one who ain't got a gun, and their family of two kids or two girls, two boys, one girl, whatever. He can give a family of three or four or five guns for everyone. And I just worry about black people don't think like that. And it's like, it's, you know, for the ones who are legally and can do it, or selling, I really, really feel like you need to think about your family and what you're going to do if that was to happen. But you already know things can happen. I see all these UN, these stories about UN or militarized police, and I just feel there's something with the trigger black folks that would start it. And white people got guns and they sitting on it and they ready. And I just sit back and nobody talks about it. We talk about gun violence, but you know, I guess it's taboo for. It seems like it's taboo for black folks to talk about protecting yourself. You know, because, you know, when I made my purchase, I don't think about shooting no black people. I don't think about shooting nobody. But I worry about, you know, in my lifetime, will I experience the death of Dr. Martin Luther King by the hands of a white person? How will I react? Can I expect one of our prominent figures? To me, the closest black thing in that White House is Michelle. And it, you know, she's so vibrant and people hate her so much. I don't know why. She's spoken nothing but good things. Has been a perfect first lady. I mean, if anything, looked the best out of any first lady ever. So, you know, I just worry about that. Think about that. And I talk to my friends and I try to, you know, get them to open their mind. Like, hey man, you know, it ain't all about, you know, what's going on today or tomorrow. A lot of my friends don't even be on Neely Fuller Jr. You know, I just find it, ridiculous when I try to. I put people in my car, let them listen to podcasts, and they just laugh at his talk, the way he talks. They don't even listen. So, you know, like you said, United Independent, put your hands up and keep it moving forward. So I just suggest to everybody, just, you know, the black woman is very important. You know, and I've forgotten that over my years of growing up. Like, I dated white girls, and, you know, I'm at the point through the cows, Dr. Wells, Mr. Fuller, I understand. I'm getting it. And I just need to, you know, especially I'm in the Midwest, in the middle, and people just, they're blind to what's going on in front of them. But, you know, yeah, I've been rambling. I'm sorry. I'll be
on. Right on. Definitely glad to hear Dr. Welsing. I've been using the word healer. I think that was a major aspect of what she attempted to do with her time and immense skill that she had was heal black people and heal some of the relationships. I think she knew that a lot of us carried a lot of trauma as a result of racism, white supremacy, a lot of frustrations with other black people. And if she was able to do something to try to help mend some of those relationships with the black females in your life, fantastic. I'm not surprised. I'm sure there are numerous black people who have that exact same experience where she was able to help mend some of the traumas that we have been going through under this system of white terrorism. Before, or actually, no, I'm just double checking to make sure we didn't miss anybody. Folks had anything that we have not heard from before I go to our female caller in New York who had the situation that she wanted to share and perhaps get feedback or thoughts. Yeah, I think we got all the people who dialed in that had a hand up thus far. Female caller in New York, did you have a commentary you wanted to share?
Yes, may I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, thank you for making time and to listen to this. So last week I found myself on the Upper West Side in Manhattan, and I had to use the restroom, so I went into the local Whole Foods. And I walked into the bathroom stall, and I saw this red box on the wall. And I got confused for a minute because I know that that's a red box that you put used hypodermic needles in. So I got confused for a second. I was like, wait a minute, am I in the bathroom or the doctor's office? And then I tried to really, you know how something happens and you try to think, has this ever happened to me before? Have I ever seen a used hypodermic needle box in a bathroom? No. So I went into the next stall. There's like four stalls in this female bathroom, and each stall had a red used hypodermic needle mounted on the wall. So, you know, there's, as we always talk about, and we are all aware of, white people are in love with heroin again, and they're being accommodated. There was a huge heroin conference here in New York in March, in Long Island. There's been talk in Mount Vernon on how they can accommodate their growing heroin epidemic. And like I said, on Long Island, they're dropping like flies. So I said, is Whole Foods accommodating heroin uses by putting hypodermic needle boxes that are commonly seen in medical facilities in their public bathrooms? No, can't be. But like Mr. Fuller said, ask questions. So I went to the customer service desk, and there were two black females there, and I asked them what those red boxes in the bathrooms were. And she said they were for needles. And I said, for what purpose are they there? I don't understand. And she said that one of the workers who cleans bathrooms was cleaning a... in the bathrooms, they have something where women put their feminine products. And she went to clean, and she got stuck with a needle. And the way the girl said to me was that, the young lady said to me that this was a needle for somebody who was a diabetic. So they put those boxes in there for diabetics who need to go into the bathroom and take their insulin. Now, I have diabetics in my family, and I haven't had a chance to question them about this yet. But I am not aware, and maybe somebody, that's why I'm on the call, because maybe I'm looking at this the wrong way. I am not aware that people who are diabetics often go into bathroom stalls and use, you know, and administer insulin to themselves and leave the hypodermic needles in trash cans or in, I've never heard of that. So that's why my first instinct was these are heroin users, and Whole Foods seems to be accommodating heroin users. Then I asked, because I just can't see management, you know, I looked at how management minds work, so I asked the young ladies if the employees in that Whole Foods were unionized, because I could see a union move would be like, what? One of our workers got stuck with a hypodermic needle. You got to do something about that. You know, they do training or what have you, but for management to spend money on medical boxes, hypodermic needle boxes to put in bathroom stalls, I've never seen this before. So I just wanted to get anybody's opinion on whether or not they believe that it really could be, because diabetics often use needles and, you know, administer their insulin to themselves using hypodermic needles and put them in inappropriate places, and this is a valid precaution? Or could it be what I'm thinking is that this is going to be a trend for corporations, companies, whomever, wherever these this population, this heroin population, is heavily frequenting, that these boxes are going to be put into place as a precaution, so that no one else has to be injured by their drug abuse paraphernalia. So I just wanted to get your feedback on that, because I'm always looking at the behavior of what white people sanction. There are things that they do for entertainment, for their recreation, and how what they do affects the dominant society, and how we have to conform to their rules and their laws and things of that nature. And I also have that feeling about, like, little children on cooking shows. I believe that this is warming us up to legalized pedophilia. That's just my thought, you know. And so I just wanted to get anybody's idea on that. That's all I had on my line. Thank you for listening.
For sure, for sure. That's fascinating. Just today, as I was coming in to prepare for the program at the intersection, not too far away from my residence, not exactly around the block, but not that far away, someone had dropped a package at the intersection. It was actually out in the road, and it was like a box of a whole bunch of needles, like many, many needles. I would say more than 10, just right out in the road. They dropped them, and cars are trying to swerve around them, left and right. I mean, it was out in the middle of the road, so I wasn't able to go to inspect to see, you know, what all was there. But you could clearly see that there were a lot of needles in this package that had been dropped and ran over in the road. And this area here in Washington State, I mean, is known for methamphetamine use and heroin. They've been talking about that. They just did that big PBS documentary that came out at the beginning of the year, and talking about this scourge of heroin and how this is one of the areas that's been hit really, really hard over the last 10 years. And they're so accommodating, since it's white. I mean, this area is super white anyway, but they're trying to be so accommodating and having all these locations set up where you can get treatment and where you can drop off your needles and all this other stuff, just to make it easier for white heroin addicts to function, to get help if they need it, or to just, you know, maintain as they indulge in their heroin addiction. And you said this was in Manhattan, and I think Manhattan as well. That area of New York, I think, is also known for being, this is really expensive real estate, and you have to be a white person who has quite a few nickels if you're going to stay here. We don't have just, you know, any old black people coming up to live in Manhattan. I think it's been like that for some time. So my thought is that I would seriously doubt that they would put that in for diabetics. I've known diabetics in my life, and they generally have their material if they need insulin or a needle or what have you. That's something that they would generally have in their residence. It's been my experience. I have not known them to just be out and about having needles with them, just on a run going to the grocery store or something like that, and I've got to go make a run to the bathroom and take an injection of some sort. I'm not saying it never happens, but just my experience, that was not a common thing. Not common enough that Whole Foods would have to have, you know, a whole system, a whole code in place to deal with people
diabetics using needles in their restroom facilities. I just, that does not seem believable to me. I think it's just total acquiescing to white heroin addicts who are using that store and probably using that restroom area to shoot up while they're there. It could even be Whole Foods employees, who knows. But that's what it speaks to me, and I think that's going to be a widespread thing. I know that's kind of widespread here. I don't think I've ever been into a restroom, like any public restroom, where they have an area where you can dispose of needles, but I know they are having a growing number of facilities where it's just, this is a place where you can go and drop off those used needles and what have you. They're having more and more of those places and more creative ways of having needle exchanges and that sort of thing to aid whites who are doing all this. So that's what I think it is. I think they were probably just probably did not want to open up and just be truthful in terms of the employees that you asked. Not saying that, because I think you said they were black employees, not that they were being deceptive, but I suspect that that is the company rhetoric that has been given out, that that's why we're doing this. Not that, you know, we have a lot of heroin users that are coming and using our store. I don't think Whole Foods would want that type of publicity to be known as, this is the heroin shoot up spot in our bathroom. But yeah, that's what I think it is. I could be in error, but I've not seen one of those. But it wouldn't surprise me if that becomes a growing trend, if that makes sense. Did other folks have commentary, or am I talking crazy?
Can I be heard?
I heard both of you, Thomas in New York and Roz.
You want to go first, Thomas, or what?
Hello?
Oh, okay. No problem. Thank you. I was going to say, absolutely. I know quite a few diabetics and have known them throughout my life as well, and I've never seen any business make any accommodation for a diabetic in any way. Matter of fact, they could actually start parading like the gay movement to get accommodated, because I've never heard of anything like that. One thing I can say is that I did see a documentary last year on National Geographic about drug use in New York City in particular, and they did say that heroin use was going up in Manhattan. But the other thing, because I know a couple of people who actually, like, sadly, people who I know that use meth that are black and they're gay, and one of the methods of using meth is injecting it. So it could also be that, because I know that meth use amongst homosexuals in New York and amongst white people, period, is extremely high. So it could be actually that, and it seems to me like they gave those black females in the store some sort of nonsensical, you know, story to tell people, and obviously it seems like they might have fallen for that, but it definitely seems like a codification towards the protection of white people using drugs in public spaces. They even used to, like, when they used to have the porta potties and stuff like that in areas or near areas that have drug problems, they actually had to remove the porta potties because people would use the porta potties to, you know, shoot drugs or smoke drugs or whatever it is. And bathrooms are always a place that drug addicts go to find privacy in the stalls in order to do whatever drug they're doing. So to me, it makes total sense, you thinking the way along the lines that you're thinking. And I'm thinking it's to facilitate methamphetamine use for those who inject it, and also heroin use, because both of those drugs are probably the two most used drugs in the country, especially for white people. Like, when it comes to meth, like, that is their thing, and heroin is now having a resurgence in the white community in a way that is unfathomable. And funny enough, Harlem, when it was black, was the heroin capital of the world at one point. So I just find it very, very interesting. But yeah, that's my contribution. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate it. You know, you're both of you. Because confirming that for me. And by the way, when Harlem was the heroin capital of the world, we didn't have no boxes. We just dropped them on the street.
That's right.
For the children to pick up. Okay, that's what that was about.
I'm sorry. I was going to say, the other thing is, diabetics are trained on how to safely discard their needles. I've never seen a diabetic just put a needle that's not covered in the trash or any space that someone can get to it or a child can get to it. Every diabetic that I've known has always recovered or capped that needle and properly disposed of it if they were using it in their house or, you know, if they were traveling somewhere and had to inject insulin. So just the whole idea of them even saying to you, oh, well, somebody got stuck with a needle while cleaning the bathroom, that's drug addict behavior. That stuff used to happen at Coney Island. I'm from Brooklyn. Drug addict drugs, crack and other drugs were in its heyday in New York. So that's something that I've only seen with drug addicts, not with diabetics. So that's my other contribution. Thank you.
Yeah, you don't have to tell me about Orchard Beach because those sand comas would never comb up them needles. They were always on the beach.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm sorry, Thomas from New York, I think he had something he wanted to say.
Yes, I did. You know, in high school, there was a teacher slash basketball coach who was a racist, and he was an insulin injector. And, you know, I remember we came together and made a complaint because he would leave spots of blood in the bathroom, or you could see the not the syringe, but the cloth. He wouldn't flush the toilet or whatever. What I was thinking is definitely true about the heroin use, to accommodate white people, of course. Give them a place where they could go and shoot up and not be harassed by the police, something like that. And probably, you know, let them stay in there and give them a free, some food and stuff, too, for free while they're in there, too. I'm going to go on 125th Street and check out. I think there's a Whole Food where the Passmark used to be, and I'm going to see if they're in there. But also, while you were discussing it, I looked it up, and it said that they expect to have these all airports. And they say due to people who take insulin, but mostly Humira, which is a rheumatoid arthritis drug, and it appears to treat psoriasis, Crohn's disease, and you know, a whole bunch of other things as well. And this seems to be a very popular drug. So I'm also thinking that there are a lot of white people who I typed in Humira addiction, and it pops up. You know, there's a lot of people addicted to this drug. That's a whole, that's a prescription drug. So I think that a lot of these drugs that they're coming out with in the future are going to require a syringe. As they try to legalize heroin, I'm sure they're going to come with some legal form of it that, you know, you can shoot up and it won't be a criminal offense to have it, and you can get it from your doctor. I'm sure they'll come out with something like that pretty soon as well. And I'll meet my mom.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
I just have a feeling that, you know, if this Whole Foods was frequented by you know, overwhelming majority black people, non-white people, instead of setting up these Sharps containers, should they be setting up cameras and sting operations to, you know, see if someone's doing some type of work? Type of illegal activity. That's all I have.
I ain't no black people around here.
No black people in that Whole Foods. However, there's a huge Whole Foods opening, I think, also on 125th Street across from the Lineage Lounge. Thomas from New York, you may know what I'm talking about. I didn't know that the Pathmark turned into a Whole Foods. I hadn't been that far east. But I hope know that there's another one opening up. So we'll see if Sharps boxes show up in their nose as well. I don't know.
Definitely agree. I could not see them taking that same approach if it was black people were the predominant patrons at this Whole Foods, them being that accommodating as previous caller said, it would be cameras, sting operation, undercover enforcement officials everywhere. I mean, it would be, in my view, totally different approach to how they they might even get rid of the restroom totally, might not even have public bathrooms in the facility anymore.
And you know what you just said does make me think, because when heroin addicts do not have access to needles, especially very, very poor ones, they're going to smash those boxes open to get at those needles to reuse them. So that the whole bathroom scenario is going to turn into like a toxic waste nightmare. I see it happening down the road simply because, you know, white people are savages. You know, you're going to have those dirt road, really poor white people who can't even afford clean needles, and they're going to want to get into those boxes to get at the used needles because drug addicts don't care about, you know, sanitation or anything of that nature. when they're, you know, looking for a fix on that level. So I could see that becoming a nightmare in no time flat, and then white people would come up with a new code to, you know, work on that aspect of it next. But I just thought about that, just seeing that becoming like a bloodstained nightmare in the bathrooms.
Speaking about that, and, you know, I just got a visual of what you were talking about. And with regard to that and black people's confusion, I don't think that many of us can recognize some of these heroin users. I know I probably don't. They probably wear suits and all of that. I get that. But I had an experience up here, like I'm way uptown here near Washington Heights, and there's a drive that ends up here by me, and there's a couple of white heroin addicts who have found their way up here at the end of the drive begging for money. I mean, and I look at them, and I could tell these are the ones that live under the bridge and, you know, what have you. But many of us don't correlate that, and I believe it's because of the color of their skin, with them being drug abusers. I think that's part of our general confusion. And I say that because they were panhandling for money. Of course, I'm looking at them waiting for the light to turn. But this black woman, you know, she rolls down her window. She got $2 in her hand. And she's getting ready to give it to him. So I'm beeping my horn like, don't do it. And she's looking at me like, what? What's the problem? They're saying they're hungry. And I'm looking at her, keep your money. Please, keep your money. And I'm kind of like giving her the signal that, you know, that they shoot up and stuff like that. But she didn't get it. And that's, you know, that's part of our general confusion when we, a lot of us, not all of us, you know, those of us who are more aware and less confused, we see them, we say, oh, they're homeless, but we're not correlating their addictions and their other degeneracies. We're not correlating that. And, you know, we're sitting up here giving them our money and stuff like that, so... I mean, I just wanted to throw that out there because I got a visual of them being the kind that would smash boxes, like you said.
It's funny you mentioned that because, you know, I met up with Roz this last fall, and we were downtown Manhattan, and a white guy comes up to us and asked us for change. And, you know, we both like, we ain't doing this, you know, change. But he was very aware. He said, you know, none of these white people around here give me change. I have to go to Brownsville to get some money. So, you know, he picked the blackest area of New York to say, oh, okay, yeah, that's the only place where, you know, me as a white person could get some change. And, you know, so to find them up there in Washington Heights wouldn't be surprising because they know that due to our victimization that we'll be giving them change before we'll give it to someone who looks just like us. Also, in European countries, because if you think heroin is bad here, I mean, I think Moscow is 1 out of 4 people between the age of 18 and 35 are addicted to heroin. And Berlin has a big crisis. It's also big in the Netherlands. And they actually have syringe disbursement centers put out in public places to go and get clean syringes to shoot up, and they designate certain public areas where they can shoot up and not be harassed by police. So I expect to see a huge part of Central Park soon being a shoot-up zone.
While she was sharing that, I remember the portion from Long Walk to Freedom. Again, reading is more important than watching television. Reading and writing, coincidentally. But I remember when Dr. Welsing, when she was on the program, in fact, I was I shared from Long Walk to Freedom. We were talking about the situation with Bill Cosby and how she would respond to that, what her thoughts were about that. And she was talking about all the infinite number of sexual violations of black people, males, females, children, all of us. And she said, you know, when white people respond to the way that they have sexually terrorized black people forever, then, you know, we could talk about Bill Cosby after they talk about what they've done to us for centuries. And I included in that, I was saying Nelson Mandela, Madiba, he talked about how when he was in greater confinement for those nearly 3 decades, that whites used to, the guards, the inmates, they used to urinate on him. This is what the whites did. And she gave her response to that. And I remember she, that was something profound. I think she had said that she hadn't read Long Walk to Freedom, so she hadn't heard that before. But she had talked about how some of her clients had talked about this. I think she said it was a black male who had been in the armed services, that a white person urinated on him. And it just seems to be a staple of racism, white supremacy, using their sex organs to denigrate black people. Anyway, the other passage that I thought of that's related to our current conversation about seeing these poor whites and not thinking that they're addicts and we still want to help them, it reminded me of that portion in Madiba. I was able to put my hand on it. Really. So I said I love the ebook versions because you can place things really quickly. I don't know if I'd have been able, I wouldn't even have had the physical copy in my hand to do so. But the ebook from Long Walk to Freedom, Madiba, he says, while I was walking in the city one day, I noticed a white woman in the gutter gnawing on some fish bones. She was poor and apparently homeless, but she was young and not unattractive. I knew, of course, that there were poor whites, whites who were every bit as poor as Africans, but one rarely saw them. I was used to seeing black beggars on the street, and it startled me to see a white one. While I normally did not give to African beggars, I felt the urge to give this woman money. In that moment, I realized the tricks that apartheid plays on one, apartheid, white supremacy. I realized for the everyday travails that afflict Africans are accepted as a matter of course, while my heart immediately went out to this bedraggled white woman. In South Africa, to be poor and black was normal. To be poor and white was a tragedy. I think that is how we have been afflicted, contaminated, brain trashed worldwide, not just in South Africa. And he was writing about this, I suspect, doing the math, this would probably be 40, 50 years ago. I think this is still true now, 2016, for the exact reasons that the female caller in New York just said, that we just don't see, for whatever reason, we just don't see whites when they're down and out as, oh my God, this is some sort of fiend. Get away from me. I don't want to give you anything. You might try and rob me. Get away. Call the, you know, enforcement officials. We just don't see them in that manner. Them being classified as white still takes precedence and all of the unfortunate associations with that here. Let me see if I can find something to try to help that person out. Anything else folks wanted to make sure they got in last minute or so before we wrap things up? Anything else? And if make sure I'm checking in, commentary that I shared about separation, in my view, separation, quote unquote, does not solve the problem of racism, white supremacy. Wake up call. My suggestion would be, I don't think that's an accurate metaphor to describe what we're talking about in terms of someone getting a more accurate understanding, realization of white supremacy, racism, or any of the portions that we spoke about earlier. Anything else folks want to make sure they get in before we wrap things up?
Yeah, I had a quick one. I was reading the Wall Street Journal, and this was Friday, and I see that Apple's CEO of Apple Music, Jay Iovine, has put in a bid to buy Tidal from Jay-Z.
I did see
that. And I said, Jay-Z is in a bad predicament owning all this black music, and now here's Jimmy Iovine, that's Tupac, and so Dr. Dre, that's, I mean, how much music does he own? And now he's trying to buy all that Prince stuff, because that's Jay-Z that has exclusive rights to a lot of Prince's music. And they put everything in that article, but how much they wanted to buy it for, that's what I was looking for. And I sent you, I was maybe I started to say, there's so many things I start writing and then get distracted and I never get back to it. But it was an article today about a website where you can go and put down people who you think are racist. Did you see that?
I did not see that. I'll go check my email right now.
I might have not sent it. I might have started it and not sent it, but I just Googled racist, and it came up in one of the articles, you know, this website that this white guy started, and I went to it. And you put the person's name, last name, email address, you know, and put down whatever racist commentary that you could find that they might have posted on social media or whatever. And I was thinking all these admitted racists that have admitted to being racist on the show, probably good to put a nice audio clip for each one of them on there.
It's HelloRacist.com. HelloRacist.com is the name of the site, and it looks like you can go through and just add. They have, I guess, the person's name, and then they have a posting with images or whatever it is that the person did to evidence their racism. Man, we for sure. Jane Elliott should be on there. Timothy Wise. You can just roll through the list of whites that have been here and admitted that they, Dr. Martin Kevorkian, some of the folks coming to mind immediately.
The teacher last week from Canada.
Oh, yeah.
Jillian Shue.
Tons of them. Tons of photograph, audio segment.
The white guy from South Africa.
Did he admit to being a racist?
Well, what he sent you in that email was more than enough, in my opinion. He more than fits the bill. And just to piggyback on what the sister was talking about, like us not being able to recognize drug addicted white people, really just goes to show how we have been so codified to see them as being the example of what so-called humanity is supposed to be, that even when they're drug addicted and cracked out, we're not able to see them. But we can spot a black person who is on drugs from a mile away. And the funny part is they look worse than we do when they're on drugs. But we're able to spot our own when they're high or when they're using drugs. But when a white person is there using drugs, you look past all of their filthy skin, the canker sores on their arms, all the emaciated look with the dirty yellow teeth. You look past all of that to dig in your pocket to give them a couple of dollars. They got you conditioned really seriously to see them as white people, as it's the Jesus Christ syndrome again. So even, you know, trash white people get looked at with respect and dignity. And, you know, we look at our own like trash. So that speaks volumes to psychosocial conditioning of black people.
And while I was trying to tell the sister not to give these drug addicted urchins the money, it was a woman, you know, it was a female and a man, and he put her out there, you know, with the sign. I mean, it was so classic. He put her out there with the sign, "I'm hungry" and everything, right? So I'm telling the sister not to give anybody. And she looks at me and she starts cursing me. That's all. I'm with my life. She said, "What am I doing? I haven't done anything to you. You effing so and so." Like, oh my God! I just sat there waiting for the light to change. I was like, "Please get me out of here!" But it was so sad. I mean, it really, really is a testimony to our confusion.
She was paying her tithes to Jesus in that moment. She was mad that you were interrupting her conversation with the deity. As sad as that is, that's what it comes across to me as.
We're going to get it together. We are going to get it together. This will all be just a bad experience once we have done our job on our assignment, as Dr. Welsing demonstrated. Dr. Kanban continues to demonstrate, be on our assignment to solve this problem. I posted the website that Thomas emailed me, Hello Racist. I posted it as a link, as a comment, if you're on Facebook, with this episode, with the posting for this event episode here on the Cows this evening. And it's right under Dr. Kanban. He mentioned timely, since we were talking about Kevin Durant and NBA stuff, the documentary he referenced, Journey of the African American Athlete. It's on YouTube. It's about 2 hours. He was talking about the black cyclist was so good that the racists, they would stand on the side of the road and try to throw broomsticks in his tire to mess him up. Like, if you want to contrast that with Lance Dopey Armstrong, wow. But yeah, I posted, if you want to check that out. I hadn't even heard of that documentary, but Journey of the African American Athlete. You can check it out. It's on YouTube, 2 hours in its entirety. Oh, there was one other thing or two things I'll get in really quick before we wrap up. Number one, courtesy of Roz, looks like I am doing, they accepted my proposal to do an essay on Dr. Welsing, and so the essay, I believe it's going to be titled Dr. Francis Cress Welsing, Donald Trump and the Reconstruction of White Supremacy, and talking about, because that was one of the things that she was talking about a lot in the last couple months before her transition. She talked about it on this program, she talked about it on Carl Nelson, she talked about it at the Welsing Institute, and predicting that he was going to be the next president, and why, based on her understanding of white supremacy, white genetic annihilation. So if there are reports articles, anything that's relevant to that particular title in terms of her, Dr. Welsing's assessment of Donald Trump and what's going to happen, anything that she said specifically, or just anything that has come out, articles or what have you, that have happened over the past, I guess, 7 months now, that you think would relate to that. If you could send them my way, that would be greatly appreciated. If you could use the subject Welsing essay, that would be helpful, so I can kind of keep things organized. Welsing essay, just put that as the subject. But if you come across anything, if it's a segment specifically from the ISIS papers, I'm going to go back and reread that to see if there are specific portions that I can use related to this, or if there are any other interviews or lectures that she gave that where she's talking about this subject specifically. If you want to send that, that'd be great. As I said, any articles that have come out, you know, this year, 2016, that you think are relevant to this, feel free, send them my way, and we'll be working on that for this month. The other thing, I'm not really solidified, so if you have feedback, feel free, because I could probably be persuaded either way. Medical apartheid, we're almost done. There's only one chapter left in the book, but there is an epilogue. The epilogue is a little lengthy. The epilogue is, it takes about an hour to read the full epilogue. I guess to make it simple, we have roughly 2 hours of audio left for the book study session, which is every Friday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. We normally do about 90 minutes of audio. So we could do our normal audio session, which would be 90 minutes, which would leave us roughly 30 minutes of audio for next Friday, which is, you know, pretty short. We could do that, or we could do kind of a shorter session this week, roughly an hour. So we'd have a short session this week and then a short session next week. Or we could just do the whole thing this Friday, which would make the session roughly 30 minutes longer than it normally is. But we would be done with the book this week, and then next week we could just start brand new with Blood Brothers, which is the book on Minister Malcolm X and Muhammad Ali, their friendship, the demise of their friendship, and how racism, white supremacy connects to all of that. We'd be starting that next Friday. At first, I was thinking, you know, this book, Medical Apartheid, has been so good, and let's not rush through it. But then I did not grasp that it was only that much left. I was like, well, an extra 30 minutes doesn't seem that bad. I don't know what people will be doing Friday, but I kind of started leaning to let's just do the whole thing this week, and then we can start the new book next week. If people have an opinion, and you should only be giving your thoughts on this if you participate in the book club. If you have not been keeping up, if you don't participate in the book club, then you really shouldn't have a say-so about, you know, which way we go. But people that have been following, if you have thoughts, a suggestion, a preference for how we navigate the last basically 2 hours of the audiobook Medical Apartheid, that would be good. As I said, I'm kind of leaning towards let's just do the whole thing this Friday since it's not that much left, but I think I could be persuaded to break this up if people think that would be better.
I go with let's finish it. I mean, this has been a great book, but it's been a tough one. It's been a hard one. Not to reflect on the book, I would say let's just knock it out and let's hopefully get into something a little bit more positive.
I have to second that. I'm down with the extra half hour. I don't care. It's not that I want to be through with the book either, but I agree with Thomas. I think it would be good to just bang it out Friday, and then we can move on the following week. And all I have to say is all praise is due to Dr. Frances Cress Welsing. She opened the paths and doors and roads to this happening. I almost did a Toyota dance in my house. Guys, I'm glad to hear that it went through. Just keep us posted on the developments, and I'm on my assignment, so I'll start sending you articles and whatnot that would link to that subject matter, okay?
Oh, for sure, for sure. Appreciate the recommendation pushing me to...
Anytime, man. I love your writing. It's phenomenal. I think your focus is laser sharp, and I think your insights will be really, really powerful just with the sheer number of contacts that you've had with her and the profound effect she's had on your development. I see it just on how you function on the programs on a regular basis, and I think that you're a brilliant example of a counter-racist student of Dr. Welsing's in action every time you use, especially when you talk to white folks, but especially when you deal with black people and how you handle them. So I'm so happy to hear that, and I can't wait till it comes out. Thank you.
For sure, for sure. If folks, participants in the book club, if you have a preference, you have a vote on, you know, should we just do the whole thing this Friday and finish it up, or break it up in some manner between this Friday and next Friday. If you want to email, that's fine, untiljustice@gmail.com. You should probably do this like sooner than later, like by, because I'll probably have to make a decision by Thursday in terms of how to do all this. So if you have a thought, feel free. You can message on Facebook or on Twitter at Until Justice, and we'll navigate as I'm kind of leaning towards. Let's just do it all. It's been phenomenal. I don't have enough praise to dole out to Harriet Washington for Medical Apartheid. It's just been outstanding. It's easily one of the best 5 books that I've read. It is just massively informative about racism, white supremacy. You should never again be able to hear anybody reference what individuals who classify themselves as white have done to us and classify that as white privilege. With medical apartheid in mind, there's no way you can label that. You can brand centuries of deliberate scientific terrorism and just say, oh, that's just a little white privilege there. But feel free. Let us know how to divvy it up, and we will proceed. Either way, it is coming. If not next Friday, then the Friday after next, Blood Brothers. That'll be the next book that we do. I think that'll be timely reflections on the great Muhammad Ali and Minister Malcolm X, their friendship. Another example of racists being able directly, indirectly to manipulate conflict between non-white people. And I think that would be another illustration of why we should be out of the business of name calling other black people, even if we don't agree with them or problems. I mean, that's going to happen. But just we're not in the business of name calling black people. Dr. Welsing would encourage that. And I think both Muhammad Ali and Minister Malcolm X would for sure say, yeah, we have some regrets about name calling other black people. That probably was not the best way to go, but we'll see. We will wrap things up. KamalKamban.org, KamalKamban.org. Again, it's linked in the description. I'll tweet it out again and put it on Facebook if you need the exact address, you get confused or what have you. His books are there, articles, photographs, all of the above. Go to the website. You can support his counter-racist effort as well, KamalKamban.org. Hope the broadcast was worthy of your time and energy this Tuesday evening. We'll be here on Thursday for Workplace Racism, same program time, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. This coming Thursday, if you have anecdotes you'd like to share from your workplace, you can email them untiljustice@gmail.com, and we'll read them on the program. Definitely looking forward to hearing folks. If you have figured out some codification to minimize problems on the job, share that as well. And if you all are having any kind of summer cookouts, because I know I've had to do that, where they have summer work picnics or all this other nonsense madness on the job, you can share how you have navigated that if you're having to participate in any of that as well. But at any rate, thanks for all of the folks who dialed in. Great to hear the exchange of views, and we'll be here in 48 hours. In the meantime, I will say again, because I'm sure folks did not go through all of their fireworks and booze over the last 48 hours, so I will again encourage sobriety would be best under conditions of white terrorism. You do not want to make the job of any race soldiers, Daniel Holdsclaw, Darren Wilson, Daniel Pantaleo, any of these other whites with or without a badge. You do not want to make their job any easier if you're in a vehicle. You do not want to be intoxicated. That is whether you are a driver, passenger, or pedestrian. Each and every time you're in that car, you should have that in mind. You never know when you could be pulled over. You want to be able to make a phenomenal decisions to keep yourself as safe as possible, you and anybody else that you might be responsible for in that vehicle. Buckle up every time you're in the vehicle. Let's do all that we can to minimize contact with enforcement officials. I will say again, alcohol and white, those are two things that should never go together. Anytime you see whites under the influence, that is a massively dangerous environment that should be avoided, in my opinion, at all cost. Things can get lethal in the blink of an eye. With that, thanks again for tuning in. Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. Dr. Francis Cress Welsing would remind us it is an exercise of black self-respect to refrain from name-calling and squabbling with other black people. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cal signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim,
your
brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.